22, 23 years old. Mm-hmm. It took him 20 minutes to figure out how to do it. I mean, I brought him on just to sit with me at a meeting, and he's bored, so he's figured, he's taken one element away from me, and I went, okay, well, here, well, this is how you do this part. And I got up, and
that's my son.
You know?
He has totally taught himself how to do websites from scratch.
Oh, cool.
All just by himself, and now he's, you know, takes computer science.
How old is he? Does he need a job?
22, 23. Oh.
To the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, welcome to the... Wait a second. Test. Welcome to the June 8th meeting of the closed session of the Los Osos Community Services District. We have a closed and an open session today, and I'll start by reading the categories of the closed session litigation, and then we'll open it up to public comment. The first category is pending litigation, pursuant to Government Code 54956.9A. Our agenda lists approximately 15 of the lawsuits that we are involved in at the current time. Most of these lawsuits, we are in the defense position. And so you can read all the lawsuits there. We've listed all of them for the benefit of the public who have requested that. The second topic is anticipated litigation pursuant to Government Code 54956.9B, and we'll be meeting in closed session for regarding one matter of significant exposure to potential litigation, the facts and circumstances unknown to potential plaintiff at this time. The third category is real estate. The Board of Directors meets in closed session to confer with Dan Blesky, its property negotiator, pursuant to Government Code 54956.8, to give him instruction with regard to the setting of sales prices and terms for deposition or sale of district property, parcel numbers 074229017, 074-022-022-073, and 074-022-074. The board will also meet in closed session to give direction to its negotiator with regard to potential acquisition of an interest in real property at APN 067-011-022 for negotiations with the owner of such property. Under discussion are price and terms of such acquisition. The fourth category is personnel, and the board will meet in closed session under the provisions to discuss the
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, so we're adding performance evaluation of the general manager. It was a continuation from last week, and it was an omission. So the fifth category is legal. The board will meet in closed session pursuant to Government Code 54956.9C to confer with legal counsel with regard to appeal of the judgment entered in the matter of Taxpayer Watch versus LOCSD Measure B. That's the closed session agenda. We'll be taking public comment at this time. Please step up if you'd like to speak.
Just posturing, I guess. Keith Swanson, Los Osos. Measure B, it's done, it's dead, it's over. No more money spent on it. Unfortunately, you guys can adopt whatever you want. Turn it up. Also, there on the APN, I'd like to know where this regarding this property that they're considering purchasing. Where is this property? And thirdly, why haven't we taken any action with the appeals to the SRF and with the ACL? The SRF was a while ago, and it seems like the old board, when they wanted something at the Water Resource Control Board, they got it on the agenda, like, right away. And here we are months behind, and that hasn't happened. And, you know, we need to at least get through the administrative steps so that we can move on to do whatever else we have to do. So that's it. Thanks.
With regard to the ACL, we have filed the appeal, but the State Water Resources Control Board is in charge of agendizing it, and they have not taken any action with it. It was filed back in February. There was something else.
The breach, the SRF breach.
Oh, the same is true with the State Water Quality. The SRF loan, we have an action pending. As a matter of fact, that's just been consolidated with the contractors' cases in San Luis Obispo, but that was a separate action that was filed. Oh, golly, that was filed, I'm thinking that was January. So those are out there. They just... Well, the SRF thing is in the courts, and it just takes a while. But it's out there.
The property we're considering is the Giacomazzi property behind the cemetery.
Okay. Thank you. Next speaker, please. Thank you.
I noted on a previous, Gail McPherson, Los Osos. I noticed on a previous agenda that we had and removed a possible ordinance or a resolution concerning Tri-W property as unsuitable for a sewage treatment plant. And with the judgment entered, like it's doing, the issue that has to do with the, where is it? There's an awful lot of things on here that look like they're more than one item, and it's kind of difficult to see. We have Taxpayers Watch, and we have it in two places. The format that you had for a short period of time in a table format was sure nice. It was really easy to see and understand. And we would like to also find out, I would like to find out what happened in small claims court with some of these, two of the actions that are filed, the Merrill, it's SC 060095 and SC 060026. And, that's my last minute warning. And I just encourage you to take heart that Measure B was an important statement to the community and to the people who were pursuing this outside of the community. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you have anything to report on the small claims actions, or can we do this at that time?
I know that on the Sturtevant one, we were working on some kind of a settlement, and it did not work, and therefore it would be going to a hearing. I don't have the exact dates on that. I will get that, though, and we'll have it when we come out of the meeting, out of the closed session.
Anything on the Merrill, or is that just still moving on? Mr. Blesky?
We haven't received the small claims decision yet, but we did hear the case last week.
Thank you. Mr. Dugan, would you like to speak?
Dave Dugan, Los Osos. Major B. Actually, at the last hearing, I heard a case. The case was rather well done by the LLCSD legal counsel. I don't believe the judge listened. I think he had in his mind there was anti-sewer and pro-sewer people involved. It had nothing to do with the case. The case was argued rather well. But what I really noticed was that Gordon Hensley came up, I think I said this before, was asked by his lawyer about Measure B as an ordinance if it was adopted by this board. Those parts of Measure B was adopted by this board. And he said, oh, absolutely, it could be done. This board could do that. Now, since he's so much against Measure B as adopted by the people, I think this is basically a go-ahead or a thumbs up on, you guys can go ahead and adopt portions of Measure B if you want, since it's been overturned. Before, I had misgivings about that because of lawsuits. But the main people who seem to be bringing the lawsuits, one of the main persons, says, no, it's fine. If this board adopts Measure B like ordinances, it's fine. Just the people, the taxpayers, the voters, they can't do it. But you can as a board. That's all. Thanks.
Thank you. Mr. Margeson?
Richard Ripley, representative, came to the Wastewater Committee and discussed where they were in site selection. They had 9 alternatives at that meeting, and they didn't. And they were pressed on whether they had a preference, and stated that yes, he did have a preference, but he wasn't willing to disclose that to us at that point. And now I see this on the agenda. I think it's a little ahead of the game before the community's had an opportunity to see what the recommendation is. Maybe that is the recommendation. Maybe you know more than what the public knows at this point. The last item I want to talk about is the personnel items. District auditor is here for a performance evaluation, special counsel, and Mr. Blesky. Unless I'm mistaken, I can't remember the district auditor ever having been at a closed session for a performance evaluation, and I'm curious whether he's here for that or if he's here to give some information on the audit. This closed session is very complicated. I think you all know that. I think there's some decisions that are going to have to be made quickly, and I think we're going to find out where everybody's character and where their fortitude is in the next few hours. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to speak at closed session? Closing public comment. We'll see you at 7 o'clock. Thanks very much. Please stand for the flag salute. Welcome to the June 8th meeting. Thank you for coming. First, I'd like to have a roll call vote, please. Roll call attendance. Whoa, you can tell I'm tired.
Director Sennett?
Here.
Director Sasania?
Here.
Director Tacker?
We're going to table that item.
Okay.
Okay. In the element of time, what I did forget to do is do our report out of closed session. And just to make a mention that we're still continuing closed session. But Mrs. Biggs?
Yes. The board met in closed session under provisions of government code.
I'm sorry. It was my fault. I didn't turn on my mic. The board met in closed session with regard to pending litigation pursuant to the provisions of Government Code Section 54956.9B. Excuse me, I think our agenda says A, but it should be B. And receive reports on the various matters of pending litigation that remain outstanding. No reportable action was taken on those matters.
In addition, the board met with regard to anticipated litigation, and again, no reportable action was taken. There was one legal matter, item E. The board met under the provisions of Government Code Section 54956.9C to confer with regard to filing an appeal in the judgment entered in the matter of Taxpayers Watch versus LOCSD, which was the Measure B litigation. The board discussed the matter and determined that at this point it had no real choice but to appeal the determination in the hopes that there will be the opportunity for settlement, but also with the interest of preventing any obligation to or responsibility for legal fees to the other side on this particular case. As a result, there will be an appeal filed on that matter. The board also met with regard to two real estate matters. There was, again, no reportable action taken on either of those matters. There was authorization with regard to negotiation, however. And finally, the board met with regard to personnel matters. There were evaluations scheduled for the district auditor, the district special counsel, and the general manager. Only the performance evaluation of the district auditor occurred. The other two matters will be taken up, following the public session this evening. I believe that's it.
Great, thank you. All right, we have a special presentation, a short presentation from Mrs. Diane Newell. There she is. This is called the Peace and Unity Project. We were going to have it last week, and she's here to present tonight.
Thank you for having me. I'm here to speak on behalf of Terry Benko. I know that we don't all agree on every little thing, but I do know that we all agree that we love living here. So what we propose is to have a celebration of this beautiful place where we live and actually where we love in the beautiful Red Barn on July 15th. We will have, what we'd like to do is we ask everyone's participation, take a picture of some place in Los Osos, Baywood, up in the mountains, wherever, of something that you love. Be fantastic. We will also have local musicians playing. We'll have a barbecue. And it will go from noon to 7 p.m. July 15th in the Red Barn. And again, if you have any questions, ideas, we would love your participation. You can contact Terry Benko at Fitnessworks. And I think that's it. I think it will be great, and I really hope that we can all come together and celebrate this gorgeous town. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Diane, very much. Oh, Diane? Miss Newell? Miss Newell? We had a question for you. Could you come back to the podium really quick? Director Sennett. Oh.
I thought I haven't been to the gym in a long time, but are you sure Fitnessworks, that's in Morro Bay, 10th Street Gym?
It's called Los Osos Fitness now, isn't it?
Yeah, Los Osos Fitness. Yeah.
The one right over here by
Florence.
And Ford, yeah, right there.
Okay.
Okay, any other questions?
Any other questions?
Okay. Yes. Celebrate where we live. A celebration of where we live. Yes. Yes, thank you. It's on the notes I never looked at. July 5th. Please have your 4x6 photos to Terry Benko at Los Osos Fitness by July 5th. And you can call her there. I can give you my phone number too. You can call me and donate a cake. And if you have pens, there'll be posters up in a little while. We haven't got to that point yet. But my phone number is 528-8533. And if you'd like to play, any ideas you have are very welcome because it is for the community. So let's have some fun.
Great. Thanks again.
Thank
any
you.
Other questions from the board? Okay, thanks very much. Okay, we're going to move along to consent calendar. We only have the one item on consent calendar. Mr. Blesky, did you have anything to add? We're not doing any oral reports this evening, I understand.
No reports this evening.
Okay. Anything to add? Any questions from the board at this time? And then we'll open it up to public comment. Okay. We're opening up consent calendar up to public comment. And really, the only item on consent calendar is approving the financial statements from February 28th to March 31st. Would anyone like to speak? Okay. Closing public comment on consent calendar. Mr. Mergeson?
With the backhoe on the consent calendar, even though it was pulled, don't you have to take public comment on it?
Mrs. Biggs, I think we do. Is that true? He wants to make comment on the backhoe even though we tabled the item.
It has been tabled, so it's not on the agenda currently. It's really up to the discretion of the board whether you choose to allow comment on that.
Fine. Go ahead.
I don't understand why it was pulled tonight. It's been put off a number of times because of the discussion that was desired through the committee process, but I think that's happened, and I think the recommendation is appropriate. I was hoping Keith Swanson would be here. He's not here yet, but I know he would have had some comments on it also. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Barrow?
Thank you. It just came to my mind that, can you hear me all right? That I had asked Mr. Blesky in a finance committee meeting a couple of weeks ago to give me the number on how much money the district has. Do you remember that question, how much we were taking in and how much we have?
Barrow, could you address us, please, and then we'll get the questions answered?
You heard me. I asked him how much we have and, you know, the balance sheet, the bottom line. And I was wondering if you can answer that question now. This is only about the finance, so that's it. Could I get an answer?
Are your comments complete, sir?
I'm finished.
Okay.
We passed out the...
Mr. Barrows, if you please have a seat, Mr. Blesky will answer your question. Mr. Blesky?
We've passed out the financial, the cash balance at every finance committee for the last two or three meetings, and we can pull up the cash balance at the office. So if he wants another copy, if the speaker wants another copy, we're more than happy to get it for you. We can provide that for you.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Dugan?
Dave Dugan, Los Osos. We've got to act on this backhoe thing. Anything you do not, as soon as possible since you pulled it. But as soon as possible, you can get some kind of RFP out. The sooner we'll have information on how it can be funded, how people are going to look at it. But it is a safety issue, and it's a necessity. Utility department can't work without them because of either emergencies or what's going on with a pipe replacement. So I urge you to get it back on the calendar as soon as possible. Because you can act now and not cost you anything and get more information. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dugan. Mr. Taylor? Want to speak?
George Taylor, Los Osos. This is kind of a procedural thing, but I didn't hear where we were going to be able to comment on closed session items.
We had it at 4:00.
What's that?
You can comment on the closed session results now because we reported out of closed session.
Yes, so those reports out of closed session. Time? Okay. I'd like to address the matter of the Taxpayers Watch versus Measure B. I would like to, hopefully, that we could handle this thing by a resolution of the CSD rather
than... Mr. Blesky.
Madam President, I looked in my folder here, and I'd just like to hand Mr. Barrow a copy of our balance sheet from this morning. So I'll get it. Okay. I'll bring it over to him.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, any discussion from the board? Questions, comments, concerns?
Yes, I wasn't at Water Ops Committee meeting where the backhoe was discussed, but from the feedback that I got, we don't even know if the backhoe can be repaired or not. We haven't had it looked at by a mechanic. So the options really, it seems like, aren't fully explored yet in terms of what we should be doing. And I thought that information would have come out in committee and we'd have had all the different options spelled out to the board. There's all kinds of ways to look at it, buy, used, lease. So I was hoping when it came back to the board that we'd have all those different options presented to us for an action. And that's the way I'd like to see that, not just a blanket, let's go out and get one.
Vice President Boucher?
It was discussed, excuse me. Mr. Milanes had indicated that they've tried to fix it about any way they could. I'm not sure that there's additional work, mechanical work that can be done. Possible, I suppose, but I know they've worked on it quite a bit. The lease option came up, the used option came up. Mr. Milanes was adamant about wanting a new backhoe. He thought in the long run that was a better way to go. And that's kind of where we left it. Dan, were you there, Mr. Blesky? I'm not sure if you were or not.
I wasn't at the Water Committee, but at the Finance, they went over it with a fine-tooth comb. And the discussion, I understood from members of the public and folks that had attended the Water Committee that they had looked at the various options, including whether we should purchase the backhoe under the iBank at the low rate, but with the 30-year, you know, you're paying quite a bit in interest on it. Or the dealers, the equipment vendors, do have basically, I think it was, I think it's in the board package, 0% loans for 36 months.
Right.
And it made good fiscal sense to go that route rather than pay 3, 4, or 5 times for the unit, be paying on it, you know, 10 years after its service life. There was one other point I had for you. It was just if I can bring to the board's attention, this is for the RFP, not necessarily to authorize any kind of a purchase, but just to advertise. We can bring it back next week, or if you choose, you could put it back on the night, but we can deal with it. The concerns, though, that we really heard, both from the operators and from those in the public, was the concerns about the safety of the vehicle. Hydraulically, it seems to be sound. For example, brake systems and the hydraulic actuators. But my personal experience is when you start hitting 30 years, you start seeing, you won't see the cracks in the welds, and I've seen dips and booms break. And then when they go, they fracture, and it's a catastrophic failure. There's no yield in it. It snaps the weld. And that's the kind of things that are speculative. And that was their concerns. It's pretty old.
Director Tacker?
Yes.
Vice President Fouché?
Yes.
Director Sasenya?
Yes.
Director Sennett?
Yes.
President Schicker?
Yes. Okay, we're going to be moving on to the
President
item.
President Schicker?
Yes.
Excuse me, before you move on, I noticed that I omitted a step in the report on the legal action. And if you would indulge me, I'd like to make the record here.
Of course.
On the decision to appeal the Measure B case, that was done pursuant to a motion by Board Member Tacker, seconded by Board Member Sennett. The vote was 3 affirmative votes, Tacker, Sennett, and Schicker. Board Member Sasina voted no, and Board Member Fouché abstained. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, on to the first item. Mr. Miller, would you like to present our guest, or Mr. Blesky?
I think Mr. Miller's been doing a lot of the hard work for us as a good district engineer, so he gets the limelight.
For a short time. Thank you, Madam President.
Tonight we have the Ripley Pacific team with us, and I'll have Dana introduce his team. The purpose of this evening's presentation is a follow-up to a wastewater committee meeting that we had on Tuesday. And really we're going to be talking about two major topics tonight. One is the approach that the consultants are looking to take with our project report update. And the other is looking at site selection this evening. And so those are the two main items. And this is a first step for us. This is presented from an engineer's perspective. Of course, there'll be board feedback. There'll be feedback from other committees, such as environmental review. But this is what this team was scheduled to do, is 5 weeks after notice to proceed, to come back and look at site selection, and they're doing that this evening. So we're looking forward to receiving the presentation tonight. This is really an informational item. We're asking you to receive the report, solicit public comment, and provide some feedback to the team. And then, based on that feedback, we'll go ahead and release the first two technical memoranda for this project report update early next week. Be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Any questions for Mr. Miller? Okay, Mr. Ripley, it's all yours.
All right, great.
Am I on? Good evening. Dana Ripley, Ripley Pacific. I am the team leader for the wastewater plan update, and it's with great pleasure that I'd like to introduce my team. We've had a fast and furious 5 weeks.
Mr. Ripley, I'm sorry to interrupt. The people in the back can't hear you, so I don't know if you can speak louder or the microphone can be adjusted. Sorry.
Okay, I'll speak louder. I apologize. We've had a fast and furious 5 or 6 weeks, our goal is to meet the schedule, that is to have a project report update by July 28th. We believe we're on schedule with this presentation to you tonight. We're excited about what we've done over the last 5 or 6 weeks, tonight we're giving you our first, I would like to call it a status report. As Rob indicated, we'll be discussing the agricultural exchange aspects. Ken Schmidt, our hydrogeologist, will be talking about the implications to aquifer and water supply. And then I'll do a cleanup with a little discussion of collection system and how we're looking at attacking that aspect of the project. And with that, Dr. Sheik.
Good evening, board members. It's a pleasure to come back before you. With your indulgence, I'll take a minute to get the computer up here so I can project some slides to aid with my presentation. As Dana said, we've been working furiously because we have a very short time frame. We are halfway in the middle of our performance period, and we have several items that Dana mentioned to report on. We are making progress on other items of the work, of the scope of work, but these are the ones that we will talk to you about right now. I'll start off with talking about the treatment plant site selection process and hand it over then to Mike. We looked at many sites in Los Osos and around the surrounding areas. We probably looked at 20, 25 sites from aerial photographs, from observation, by driving around, walking around, trampling through mud in the rainy weather, getting stuck, and talking to a variety of people and studying the sites from various perspectives based on data on a number of criteria that I'll mention later. 9 candidate sites presented themselves as worthy of more detailed look, and those are the ones I've mentioned here, and my colleague Dana's son, Cameron, is distributing the map that shows the locations of these sites, and that map is also projected on the screen now. From left, clockwise, there's the Tri-W site, which everybody is familiar with. Then the what we call the Ayacono site, which is a natural habitat area to the east of town. Then the Brannan site, the what we call the Giacomazzi site. These are based on the names of owners, Andre 1, Andre 2, the cemetery site, the site next to the cemetery, actually, not the cemetery itself. The FEA stands for Fundamentalist Evangelical Association. It's a church property that is evidently for sale, and that was one that we looked at because of its evident availability. And the Gorby site, which is a equestrian farm and had some features going for it. We looked at these sites from a number of perspectives. I'll show you some pictures very quickly. For those who haven't seen Ayacono, for example, it's a beautiful area with some very nice features. We started out with, we're 15. On Tuesday, they became 16. The first evaluation criterion was elevation and topography. It may not look like it, but elevation and topography has a lot to do with life cycle costs, how much pumpage takes place day after day, year after year, decade after decade. So it's very important to know what the elevation is. Area and size have got implications about the footprint of the treatment, whether it's a mechanical plant or ponds. Current land use is critical. Neighboring land uses, distance from nearest residents for obvious reasons, proximity to creeks and other environmentally sensitive areas. The environmental consultant will look at these alternatives in much more detail, and they'll do their job, and we'll coordinate with them if they come on board while we're still working. But we did our best to look at the environmental characteristics of the site and their nearby areas. Availability. Availability includes several factors: cost, restrictions, deed encumbrances, attitudes of the farmers themselves or the owners of the land, whether or not they would even talk to us, and proximity to storage sites. In addition, proximity to water reuse sites is extremely important to this project because this is a project based on zero discharge and total use of resources, including the nitrogen resource, no removal of these resources, no discharge of these resources. We don't want to get rid of it because they are valuable. Water is extremely important here. Next, accessibility for heavy vehicles and equipment. This is important during construction and also during long term because trucks will have to come, deliver supplies, deliver materials, and also to take out biosolids from the site. So that accessibility is extremely important so we don't have these trucks going through narrow streets of the neighborhoods. Viewshed impacts. Because of the beauty of the town and the views toward the bay and toward Morro Rock, it's critical that whatever we propose is not going to destroy somebody's view. So we looked at sites from that perspective. Prevailing wind, essentially from smell perspective, the potential for smell is always there whenever you're dealing with wastewater, even though there will be provisions for odor control. Those are now standard on almost all treatment plants that are designed today. Flood potential, groundwater elevation, growth inducement potential, and the most recently added one, seismic potential. I had left that out in the previous version, but we were corrected on the Tuesday at the wastewater committee meeting. Feedback from the community is extremely important, and we invite it as we go through this process. We sought community opinion on the importance of each of these criteria Tuesday night. It was election day, so we asked everybody to vote. And they did vote. They did vote on the relevance of the criteria that we had selected. These 15, at that point, criteria were presented to them with a column to put their idea of the importance of the criterion. And I would ask you tonight, if you permit me, Madam President, to do the same thing tonight. You have a sheet, you have a blank that has the list of all the criteria on the left-hand side, and the right-hand side is your opportunity to put a number from 1 to 5. If you think it's unimportant, put a 0 on it. If you think it's very important, put a 5 on it, and somewhere in between if you think it fits somewhere in between. So the group that was there gave us 13 sheets with their evaluation criteria, which we used, and I'll show you the results later. And we will use your input as well and see how that affects the ranking and rating and scoring of the sites, of the nine sites that are under evaluation. The group also told us there are additional criteria that they felt we had not considered. Seismicity, number one, they were definitely right about availability, noise. The systems that we will be working with will be, in all probability, quite noiseless. And I think nearness to residences will take care of that. That is a criterion that's already there. Community acceptance is extremely important, and I think it's embodied, embedded in almost all the criteria that we have listed here. Potential for improvements, plantings, etc. That is a good thing to consider, but I don't think it's a discriminator between sites. Finally, socioeconomic impacts, and that is the subject that hopefully the environmental consultant will take into account. So let me show you what the results are from the voting that took place on Election Day at the Wastewater Committee. And I'll go one by one, each of the 15 criteria that we listed. I'll do this, and I'll try and do it very quickly so it won't take too much time. This particular criterion was weighted 5 by only one voter. It was weighted 4 by 4 voters, 3 by 2 voters, 2 by 2 voters, 1 by 1 person, and 0 by 1 voter, and the average weight became 2.5. So it's not your most important criteria, obviously, and there seems to be some unanimity on that. Area and size or shape of the property. These are the votes that came out. One vote for 5, one for 4, 2 votes for 3, 3 votes for 2, and average of 2.1, even lower than the first criterion. Current land use fared much better. It got 2 votes for 5, 4 for 4, 3 for 3, 1 for 2, and so on, with an average of 3.2. Neighboring land use became even more important than that, with an average of 3.8. As you see, 4 people voted for a weight of 5, 3 for 4, 3 for 3, 2 for 2, and nobody voted 1 or 0 for that. So obviously, most people thought it was an important factor, and I think I agree with them. Now, even more important than that is distance from the nearest residences, 4.2, very close to 5. 6 people voted for 5, 3 for 4, 2 for 3, 1 for 2, and nobody voted 0 or 1 for that. A lot of unanimity there. Proximity to creek with an average weight of 3.6. Availability in terms of cost, encumbrances, and owner attitudes came to 4.5. Again, very, very high. 9 people voted to weight it as 5. Proximity to storage sites got an average weight of 3.7. Proximity to water reuse sites, very high, 4.4. Accessibility for heavy vehicles and equipment, apparently not many people thought much of that, although practically speaking, it is really a critical element. Anyway, we used the average weighting factor of 2.9 for that. Viewshed impact got a 3.5. Obviously, everybody thinks the beauty of the town and its views should be protected. Prevailing winds, 3.3. Flood potential, 3.7. Groundwater elevation, 3.2. Growth inducement potential, 2.9. I was surprised at that. But there seems to be some diversity of opinion. The high weight of 5 got 4 votes, and the low weight of one of them is close to Tri-W site, and one of them is close to the Gorby site. So those sites will get low scores on this particular criterion, and the other sites will get higher scores. So that's so much for the criteria and the weighting factors, and this is the results. The columns in blue are without applying the weighting factors. As you see, the Giacomazzi site gets the highest score, followed very closely by the Brannan site, which is next door to it, followed very closely by the cemetery site and the FEA site, and the others much, much lower. Tri-W site scores the lowest, followed by Iacono. When we apply the weighting factors, the high-rated sites get even better. Obviously, the criteria are working. So after we get your input on these sheets that I passed out and yours, members of the board, We'll apply those, and we'll get another set of columns here that will probably raise the high-ranking sites again. This is a preliminary ranking. This is not ultimate. This is not final. We'll be talking to folks. We'll be doing some more study on these, and the final results, of course, on July 28th will be announced. So next, I would like to hand over this to my colleague, Mike Huck, who will talk to you about his discussions with various growers and landscapers who we hope will be using recycled water and give us our zero discharge goal. Mike?
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here and address you all tonight. I've been spending quite a bit of time out in the field over the past few weeks. I was here all week this week and a couple of weeks ago meeting with growers. But we also first have broken the phasing down for potential use of the approximate amount of water that we feel be generated by the plant upon completion of approximately 1,500 acre feet, which for an agricultural use or typical turf grass use would equate to between 500 and 600 acres in this climate of total area that we would need. We have phase A up here that is near the preferred plant site or our engineering studies preferred plant site we used for the model here. About 320 acres in there that would be our phase one, where we're looking for about at least 250 for phase one. Phase two would be the red. Now, you see some of it extending outside of the basin area here, the blue line. And the reason that is because I wasn't exactly sure where the wells were for all these properties. Because if a well is back on the basin, that would count as exchange. And we didn't get that in depth with all the growers yet. I was just out there getting some very preliminary feedback and their initial feelings, not asking for more information than I felt was relevant at this point in time. Phase C, or the third phase, would be in town, and you can see there's not a lot of acreage in there as compared to the other areas unless you were to go into dual plumbing. And I bring that up because I included phase D, which is really off the basin, but it's there for a particular reason, whereas knowing that dual plumbing the entire town for residential type issues would be extremely expensive, very time-consuming to do and carry out. The fact of the matter is you're different than what we heard. Judy Serpa, who's the manager at the cemetery, said I would need to know all the short and long-term conversion and operating cost factors to make a final decision. They were very positive about the operation in most cases. They just need a financial analysis for their own use to take it on. I spoke with Brad Parker at the San Luis Obispo Unified School District, who said that their board of directors is now over the hump on using recycled water. One of their campuses is now on recycled water, and Title 22 tertiary water they would accept. No question asked. Ian App, who's the Sea Pines Golf Course Superintendent, said, I've got no problem to date because they're using partially blended recycled water, and I don't feel going to 100% recycled water would present me a problem. So he was very positive about this. William Kostick at the sod farm, we really haven't had time to sit down and talk in depth on this. He's been very busy with his season being a little bit late this year, he said, but I am interested in sitting down talking to you about this opportunity. So I'm going to try and catch him before I leave town this week. Hope Lindsley, who's the daughter-in-law of the owners of Los Osos Valley's nursery, when I spoke with her, she said nursery and landscape reuse just makes sense. Warren Lilly at Warren's Nursery said, we drip irrigate in our greenhouses and therefore don't use too much water. But he said, I might consider it for my 5 acres of horse corrals. Lowell Hoff at Sheltered Acre Retail Nursery said, I would consider it. I'm just concerned about the final TDS and SAR, which are really quality constituents when you look at agricultural irrigation with recycled water. Peter Dohe, who's a vegetable farmer down in that lower land, said, I don't know if we can use that water. The state now requires us to monitor for fecal coliform and other pollutants in our runoff. We even discourage horseback riders from using our field roads for fear of droppings contaminating the irrigation runoff. Can't you just use it all on the landscapes in town? To me, that wasn't too surprising. I didn't expect the ag people to be 100% acceptance on first encounter. It's kind of a new concept to agriculture compared to landscape. William Lee, who leases out some land to vegetable growers, called him one morning and he said, "I'm interested to hear what you have to say and I want to speak to you. Can you call me back tomorrow?" The next day he said, "I have no use for that water." So that was kind of confusing. Elliot Paulson at Clearwater Cover Nursery out on the edge of town, on the edge of the basin, he says, "My water has been increasing in TDS for the last few years, primarily sodium and chloride. And for those of you who aren't aware, sodium is the worst possible ion to be putting on plants and soils. It destroys soil structure, and it harms plants immensely. So that's a big concern for him. He says, "I must reverse osmosis treat my water to germinate seed." He says, "If recycled water has an acceptable TDS and higher calcium magnesium concentration that allows me to reduce my RO need, I am all for it." Eric Michelson at Clark Valley Organic Farm said, "Yes, I'm interested if it does not interfere with my organic certification," which I have since tracked down and found out that it is acceptable to use tertiary recycled water for organic farming, and it doesn't do any damage to their certification level. One of the other interesting comments Mr. Michelson made said, "I have two wells on my property. One produces about 90 to 100 gallons.
I'm Ken Schmidt, a groundwater hydrologist from Fresno, and I've been working for 40 years in groundwater hydrology, and I first became acquainted with septic tanks and sewage effluent and nitrogen transformation and so forth in about 1968 or 69. It's when I began my dissertation on nitrate and groundwater in the Fresno area. I'm a native of the Fresno Madera area. My family's lived there since 1892. So I'm kind of, they call me the Fresno kid when I used to go to school in Arizona. But I learned about those, and since that time and working in private business, which in about 3 weeks will be 40 years, I've learned quite a bit about septic tanks. And I've been involved in a lot of monitoring of septic tanks and also effluent. We're involved in some of the largest sites there are in the San Joaquin Valley, the city of Fresno, which is the largest probably percolation project in California, certainly in the San Joaquin Valley by far, also Bakersfield and many other sites. We get involved with the monitoring and dealing with the regional boards on about a weekly or daily basis. One of the things I did here was to review the groundwater studies in this area, and I think you've spent money here and have a lot of information that's very useful here on the groundwater system. And I found particularly the studies of seawater intrusion particularly valuable, the discussions of geology and water levels and water quality. Tim Kleith, of course, who did these studies, is a Fresno State graduate, and in 1972 he took a class I taught in groundwater quality at Fresno State. So we expect to have good studies here. But these two lines, they're a little bit hard to see maybe, but it's a B and C prime. They go right there and right there. These are more or less east-west cross-sections that go through, particularly in this easterly area. Some of the areas you were just talking about, this is a cemetery right there, and the cross-section B prime we'll look at for a minute because it is a very, very applicable to this area. So you're all familiar with these studies go back to the Department of Water Resources studies years ago, studying intrusion in Morro Bay and doing a study in Los Osos to do with the septic tanks and how they might be influencing water quality. And then these studies are a better definition. They're kind of like you that are my age, when you get a pair of glasses and put them on and it starts, you know, getting more in focus. So there's a lot more detailed information now than there was years ago. So these different layers, the zone D and E are the deep, are termed the deep zone. And of course they slope towards the ocean and become shallower and shallower. And out in this area is the alluvial aquifer. This goes right through the general area you were discussing near the cemetery, or west of the cemetery. And the clay that is above this lower aquifer pinches instead of pumping out of this alluvial aquifer or the lower aquifer, which are connected in this area. Another issue is the direction of groundwater flow, and these are elevation contours. I'm sure you all know how to determine the direction of groundwater flow, but we just draw lines perpendicular, and they go in the downward direction. So it means the direction of flow from out here in the cemetery area is directly in towards the area where the public supply wells are and where the pumping center has been. So this is an indication that if we decrease pumping out in this area through an exchange, it will be beneficial to the lower aquifer in this area. I wanted to conclude by talking a few minutes to you about the difference between irrigation use of effluent and what we call rapid infiltration or high rate infiltration. And I've seen areas, for example, in Phoenix, many studies have been done where the percolation rate was 400 feet per year, very coarse stream deposits. This would be to go out and it would be gravel, boulders, rocks 4 feet in diameter, things like that. And many of these studies were done where the water was rather shallow, but this would take 400 feet per year. And versus a farming application where farmers would only generally be applying in the neighborhood of 3 or 4 acre feet per year. When effluent is used in farming, the regional board has criteria about agronomic rates, and so we try to run those kind of things where they're efficient and much of the water is consumed by the plants, the evapotranspiration. Some of the differences between the land or irrigation of this and the rapid infiltration is that the state health department has a lot of standards for what they call groundwater recharge. Now, a lot of people in the San Joaquin Valley have, if they're a small town, have gotten around this by saying, well, we're not really recharging at our pond. We're going to call our pond a holding pond, even if it seeps a foot a day. But we're going to call it something else, a storage pond, a holding pond. We're not going to call it recharge. We're going to call it something else. We're going to call it incidental. And so some people have gotten around those regulations a little bit. But in effect, there are regulations. They say that we have to look at what is the travel time between when this water leaves the ground surface and would come out the nearest well. What is that travel time? And it's obvious if you're percolating 400 feet per year that this would reach the water table even if it was 50 or 100 feet deep in a matter of days or weeks or less. We know this very well from recharge projects, that when you have ponds, they take a half a foot or foot a day, they reach the groundwater in short order. Whereas in farming, where you might apply 3 or 4 feet, and most of this water does not percolate the groundwater, it goes up in the air as evapotranspiration, but that this movement is very slow. And so when you spread this out and farm with it, you get a long time before this water could ever reach any well. And this has tremendous advantages in the sense of the regulations that are required. For example, Fresno now is having to do pharmaceuticals and endocrine disruptors to find it. And so we've had to do that in monitor wells. And people need to use this reclaimed water for irrigation farming. In this area is shown. I think these are great ideas. I don't see anything wrong with them. So that's my presentation. Are there any questions you had?
Thank you. Ken? Ken Schmidt? Mr. Ripley? Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm going to get a little down and technical. And I apologize straight off. This is a very busy slide. And so my whole presentation is one slide. And basically what I want to do is share with you our current thinking on resolving the major issue, the issue of agricultural exchange and beneficial reuse. Are generally subordinate. I think our primary focus here is on wastewater, solving wastewater compliance issues. And so this is our first shot at looking at those compliance issues in terms specifically of
collection. We are not at a point where we can discuss treatment options. The storage options, I think, are readily available and evident. But what this graphic shows, again, is our first cut at collection. And what I'd like to start with are the background colors. If you look at the legend to the left here, the blue is very shallow groundwater. The orange is 5 to 10 feet. And you can see from this background graphic, we call these the high groundwater hot spots. Okay? And you can see that they're obvious. There's certain areas where we do have, in fact, high groundwater. We couldn't overlay the nitrate hotspot overlay. We've just been too busy color-wise. But you can see this is information that the district developed with respect to nitrate concentrations. This was April 2005. So one of the first things that I did, assuming a pressure collection system at the present time for collection, and we will be looking at pressure as an alternative to gravity. I think we have a design that's been complete on gravity, and we have a cost that's complete on gravity. And we're going to be looking at the alternative of pressure. And there are two types of pressure systems in general. One is the one where you pressurize everything, that is the solids and the liquid, and there is an alternative pressure collection that separates out the solids in interceptor tanks, also known as septic tanks, prior to pumping. That's a subordinate issue. My interest in the original look was the plumbing. And the plumbing is obvious for anybody coming into this town. If we're looking at a treatment site to the east, wherever it is on the east, that is to put a pipeline in on Los Osos Valley Road. An alternative, and that was to say, I don't care what the length of pipe is. I want to keep my elevation as low as possible to get and sewer this community and get to the east. And it turns out the alignment follows this. And the difference between doing this and this is the maximum elevation on this alignment is elevation like 82, down from 170. So that is to say that whatever these types of pumps, be they solid handling pumps or step effluent pumps, with this alignment, they'd be able to have a forever head, a static head, of about 85 feet, and this one would be 170 feet. And then we ask the question, well, do we do one or the other? And we thought about it. And we said, you know, the cost per lineal foot of this pipe is not the same as the cost of lineal foot of gravity sewers. It's a fraction. And then we looked at, well, if we eliminate the Los Osos Valley Road, can we do it all on this? And the answer is yes, but we still have to have a pipe in the road to collect all these developments here. So we decided to go with both. We've got a redundant sewer collection system that can go either way. One has a head pressure of about 85 pounds. One is a head pressure of about 170. And the pumps that we're proposing, assuming we go with a step collection, they're more efficient pumps, can really work in either alignment. The main alignment would be here with the low head. This would be a secondary alignment. So if there was any repair necessary in this area here, the community would still be sewered via this pipe. We're basically taking the same philosophy of redundancy that loop potable water systems have on a wastewater collection. And, you know, of course, we're going to have to do the budgets on this, and we're working on that now, and we're going to have a tech memo coming out specifically on this subject, comparing wastewater collection options. I apologize for not having this on a graphic, but we can look at, you can come up and look at these this graphic after the meeting. But what I'd like you to do is to take a look at the graphic here in the red line, and then we have a hydraulic profile down in the lower, so you can see the actual elevation of the pipeline as it crosses town. With that, we'd like to conclude our presentation. This is an important image for two reasons. Number one, as obvious, this is a candidate ag exchange site. That's Los Osos Creek, is it not? That's the number one importance. The number two important.
The question I had was, would you plan to use or consider analyzing use of gravity in any portion, since there's quite a bit of fall in a major part of the community to the south of LOVR?
Excellent question. The answer is yes. Originally, my thinking was to sewer the entire project as STEP, S-T-E-P, septic tank effluent pressure. If we look at grinder, it would be all grinder. I have to keep that option open. There are certain areas, as you indicate, south of LOVR that are well above the elevation of any high point on the collection system. Excuse me. What you're asking, Director Senate, is STEP versus STEG. Are there areas that can go STEG without pumps? And in the STEP design, we have to look at, number one, the static head. That is, what is the high point on the pipe? Because every pump has to at least meet that. Then there's what's called a total dynamic head that adds to that. And so there's some areas that look like they're above the high point, but they could be what I call underwater, under pressure, and we can't have any backflow into the houses. But there are some areas that are well above any dynamic head that could exist. And for those areas, particularly, if Cabrillo Estates were ever to connect in, that's an obvious. I mean, there would absolutely no need for pumps there. There are some areas here that, yes, there's absolutely no need for pumps. But we have to do, when we get into design, there are really three elevation bands. One is the low area that is below the high point of the collection system. Then there's a middle area that fluctuates, that the head fluctuates depending on the flows. And then there's an area, a third band that's above all that. And it's that third area that could go STEG. STEG meaning septic tank effluent gravity, no pump.
Well, what I was considering, which has been looked at before, is a collection system for different areas that would terminate in a cluster collection system, and then drain from that point using STEP. Do you see any advantage in that?
Let me say this. In the new subdivisions, I'm now involved with three major subdivisions in the Central Valley, all with Ken Schmidt, by the way. The densities of the developments range from very low density, 1-acre lots, to apartment complexes and potentially high rises. And you can't have an independent septic tank for each unit in those cities. This is what we call our Route 1. This is Route 2. We're looking at putting this one in first. This will follow. As you can see, Route 2 will pick up. We have existing cluster systems that we're going to tie in. This mobile home park here in this, what's that, Vista de Oro? Is that it? Is that the name, Rob? Vista de Oro right there. And Monarch would be is already on a cluster. So those are your first clusters. We're not going to go into those communities and put independent tanks. I'll tell you that. Any other questions?
Any other questions from the board? Anybody else? Director Tanker.
Mr. Ripley, I did not see in your siting criteria, and I know this is Dr. Sheik's expertise, but I did not see the criteria for community amenity or park, and I'm happy that I didn't. I think we all are happy that we didn't see that.
Dr. Sheik?
Thank you for leaving that out. If I'm not mistaken, it appears that you do intend to cross the creek. Those were some hot issues in the argument as to why not to move the sewer. As you recall, crossing a creek was somewhat controversial, and of course the park additive to wastewater treatment. Those two things were...
May I comment on that one item?
Sure.
We're going to cross the creek twice.
I know. That's what I see, that it's not really an obstacle for you.
Even if we're precluded from tacking a pipe onto the bridge, we'll go under it.
Okay.
Directional drilling is a science that's well developed.
I knew that. I think we all knew that. But there was one site that jumped out at me, and Dr. Sheik, you thought soil type wouldn't necessarily be a high priority. But in Los Osos, it is, and the soil type that you find this side of the creek is what leads to our environmentally sensitive habitat area, and I am concerned with the Iacono property in that it is environmentally sensitive, and it would have similar, if not more, cost related to mitigation as the Tri-W site did. So I hope we... take a serious look at that. Are we going to have a written report? Your technical memo? This is a presentation. I want to read it.
Could you repeat that last statement?
I would like to read what you've written.
Take that one. Madam President, staff has reviewed two technical memoranda in preparation for this presentation. Those will be released again early next week, incorporating some comments and getting those out to the board and the public.
For those that have met with us, the concept of a technical memo, I think, has been well received, and that is to say, Dr. Sheik's, we feel that it's in everyone's interest, the community, the directors, you as the board, and particularly with respect to the regulatory side, the compliance issues, the funding issues, and I think it's important for timing reasons that we have the consensus within the community, not starting on July 28th, but starting today.
Great. That's great. I did want to maybe right now take the opportunity to invite the sewer savvy Los Osos to get involved at this point, to get involved. My suspicion, I didn't see the Wastewater Committee meeting Tuesday night in that we didn't have, say, former board members. I'd love to see Frank Freiler involved, Bob Siemenson involved, Gordon Hensley involved. They all had concerns and input that brought us to the project that we've suspended. But I feel like their concerns need to be part of what we're talking about throughout our progress. And so I would invite them to participate. And something that didn't rank very high, and I was surprised too, Dr. Sheik, was the growth-inducing impacts. I remember very clearly Gordon Hensley hammering that out of town meant we would grow our way to San Luis Obispo, or somehow San Luis Obispo would grow towards us if we had a wastewater facility outside of Los Osos. And there's always been a way to remedy that, and the Coastal Commission would absolutely require that we weren't building a facility that was too large or something that could be hooked in to, and I know Gordon knew that, but I am surprised that that wasn't higher ranked by the individuals who took your test. But again, I think it's important. I stood on that side of the podium and sat in that audience for years criticizing what was happening, but I also had input, and I'm proud to say that I did help mold that project, help shape it to be, if it was going to be there, it was going to be better because I was involved. And that's what I want to say right now, is invite you to participate and be involved so that it's the best that it can be.
Thank you. Okay. And, Vice President Fouché.
I just want to thank the team for coming tonight and making our presentation to the community. Well done. I appreciate you guys coming. I don't really have any questions. I like what I see. I would like to mention that those tech memos, we mentioned the regulatory agencies, get copies of those to the Water Board, if you would please, either yourself or through Dan Blesky, so they're apprised. Thank you.
Director Singer?
I just have one comment, and because this seems to run contrary to what we'd heard in the past about recharging lower aquifers. One of the reasons the Tri-W site was always pushed was the proximity east would have everybody as much benefit as stopping the production from the west wells. And I just want to make sure I understand that.
This boils down really to the recharge regulations, that if you do a recharge, and that's what that project was, it was a recharge project, you're supposed to meet the DOHS recharge regulations. They require consideration of what is the travel time between the where it is put in the subsurface and the water table into the nearest well, and what percent of the water coming out of that well is this effluent. And so I think what I mentioned in Fresno and other places, that there's a lot of problems doing this in a practical sense, complying with those regulations. As a matter of fact, there's a letter that the regional board, Central Valley Region, wrote within the last 2 weeks to the city of Fresno and Clovis, who are partners in that plant, that they have never seen a rapid infiltration or soil aquifer treatment thing in California that met the regulations for unrestricted irrigation use, not for drinking water quality. For unrestricted irrigation use. So like Fresno, we're not drinking this water. We're percolating it, pumping it up, and putting it in canals, and farmers are using it. They said no project in California they know of has met that for irrigation, not drinking water. So I just think this is much better, where most of this water is being consumed by plants, and the travel time is tens or hundreds of times greater than it is if you recharge at this high rate so close to town.
And the other issue about stopping production on the east side being as valuable as stopping production on the west side in terms of halting saltwater intrusion, is that a true statement, somewhat true statement?
Well, this has a little bit got to do with what we call pressure aquifers, and some people have a hard time understanding those, but what it is, when the water's underneath the clay layer and when you're pumping out of the deep zone like in town, this is connected at like the speed of sound. That's how fast it's hydraulically connected. It means if we make a hydraulic change out there, it's transmitted at the speed of sound. So I don't know if you've ever seen this, but it's like if you pump a confined well and observe another one a half a mile or mile away, it'll react almost instantaneously. The water well. This means that what we do out there, where this is all connected and have an immediate effect in other areas, because it's transmitted as a pressure wave. It doesn't have to slowly migrate like groundwater flows. So, I've been involved in a lot with pressure things because, among other things, on the west side of the valley with this San Joaquin Valley drainage, we have a lot of sand layers, and I'm talking about like west of Mendota, Fireball, a lot of that area where. When the drainage water gets in them, it gets pressurized. And so
some guy could apply water up above and they'd see an immediate effect in these shallow sands. They're like 20 feet deep or 30 feet deep. So these are pressure aquifers, but this is something that you can take advantage of. The water takes a long time to travel there physically, but that's advantageous. But the pressure thing happens very quickly, and that's advantageous to the supply wells.
Thank you. I'm feeling better all the time.
Mr. Ripley, did you have something you wanted to add?
I have a question, too.
Okay.
I just wanted to make comment on how you speak.
Okay, thank you. We still have just a couple more questions. Director Sennett, do you have another question?
I was going to ask Mr. Schmidt, is there any instrumentation or testing that would verify or determine the connectivity between pressure aquifers?
Yes, that would be, for example, doing a test of wells in that area that tap the deep aquifer, and other wells could be monitored further away, including observation wells or whatever. I know you've got some observation wells just from reading the studies. DWR likes to fund those, you know, in different areas, including in the San Joaquin Valley. But it can be done through testing, through pumping a well and observing, doing this. So there's tests that we can show that. And we intend to, by the way, do kind of some checking on the geology in that particular area, looking at sort of well log by well log and looking at it independently, these things that have been done before to verify what's there. That would be in our work.
Have any of the reports to date conducted any tests like that?
Well, I think the information that is used to deduce that is on the geology and the water levels, not aquifer testing. The aquifer testing I saw was, well, let me put it this way. It's been done to determine what we call aquifer characteristics, transmissivity and storage coefficient, but I don't think it was done at a great distance, you know, like a mile or two apart, like I'm talking about doing. These things are not real easy to conduct. Because I've been involved in a number of these. And what it is first of all, we try to do these in the winter or under minimal pumping things, and we've almost got to control the pumping. Like if we tried to do something like that in the urban area here, we'd have to try to keep the least amount of wells pumping and keep it on and keep the others off to the maximum extent when you do a test like this. You can't do it real easily when they're turning on wells and turning them off and doing all this stuff all the time. So we rarely do them in the summer or in a peak pumping thing. We try to do them in very minimal pumping conditions where we can control those things. So one of the reasons it's not been done is it's not easy. I'll guarantee it's not easy, particularly if you have a grant and it says, hey, in 9 months you got to do this and this and that, and you missed the winter when you could have done it, you know, or something like that. I've worked on those DWR grants, so I understand. This are not exactly tuned to the time of year when you might need to do something out there.
Mr. Schmidt, before you go away, can I ask one other question, please? Have you gotten into the reports deep enough about our sustainability of drinking water with our current water supply? Do you think we have enough water to sustain ourselves without importing state water?
I haven't done a specific evaluation that way. I think if you combine different tools, I'm a believer in not just addressing everything through one tool. And one tool is water conservation, which is talked about in your management things. One of the other things is, and this sounds kind of stupid or something, but you guys have shallow water levels, you know, in certain areas. And what these shallow water areas do is they I'm not saying you don't have to look at all environmental things. It may have a benefit out there, but there may be ways where you can manage this basin, where you can lower water levels certain times a year in certain parts of this basin and develop more groundwater. So I think that's something that needs to be looked at, the reuse. I do a lot of work for cities, so I'm real oriented towards city public supply wells. I probably developed about 5,000 or 3,000 of them or something over the years, but All we worry about is water quality, you know, arsenic, alpha activity, color, fluoride, hydrogen sulfide, iron, manganese, nitrate, DBCP, EDB, TCP, you know, volatile stuff. Well, I've been in this long enough, you know, that 30 years ago we used to collect one water sample in a pint bottle, throw it in the back of the pickup, and fool around for a few weeks, and then when you happen to be going by the lab, just kind of drop it by there, and it costs $35. Today we have so many bottles, and it costs so much money for just one sample in a new city well, that I envision that in, you know, another 30 or 40 years we'll need a semi-truck, and we'll need about 80 ice chests, and the analysis will cost $120,000, and it'll include 200 kinds of viruses and all kinds of biologic thing we're not even testing for. But I think it's a combination of things, that there probably is adequate water necessary, but I think you have to do a number of things. But I caution you to do one thing, that water quality, just like in this intrusion thing, it's a crucial thing. And they're going to have standards someday that they don't have. You know, we used to mainly worry about nitrate when I went to work, you know, nitrate. I think they need to keep their eye on this water quality and have this whole concept that this water that is potable, this potable groundwater in this basin, needs to be used for potable water as much as possible. This is analogous to Fresno, where, if you're familiar with the valley, this snowmelt water flows through there in these canals. TDS 30 out of the Kings River, the San Quentin River, flows through there, and we irrigate cotton. And, you know, I'm a farm boy from Madeira. Grew up on a farm. I feel for them. I am one, you know. I was one. But we just can't keep doing that forever. And in here, the city, we're treating for this. We're treating for that. We're treating arsenic at tremendous cost. We got uranium that we can't afford to treat, but you can irrigate with all this water, you know. And the MWD, if you're familiar with them, they know about this snowmelt water, and they're negotiating in there right now, you know, in the San Joaquin Valley. So they know about the value of that. I'm saying your groundwater that's potable here is like that. It's worth everything, and try to use this for a potable use and reuse effluent, use the water with nitrate, the shallow water, all this stuff. Use it for irrigation and avoid treating it for nitrate. Otherwise, you're going to desalt the groundwater to treat it. And meanwhile, the other guys are still going to use the good water for something else. So it's just matching the quality. This is kind of a new concept, but, I mean, we didn't think that way 30 years ago or 40 years ago, but we do now.
That's a great answer. Thank you. Director Tacker?
Mr. Miller, can you update us on our characterization study?
Based on my last conversation with Cleith, I expect that report maybe tomorrow, early next week. It was supposed to be the end of this week, so very soon we'll have some good data on upper aquifer characterization.
Thank you.
These compounds. You either don't have a problem or they're there. And the analysis that were done in Fresno were done by the U.S. Geological Survey, because they're one of the only labs that can do this kind of work. And on some of the sampling rounds, they gave us two sets of analysis. One, when they'd use a certain detection limit, made it look like almost everything was non-detectable. And then one where it did something. Now, the things that have showed up are like, you've heard of them before, like caffeine and certain kinds of phenols. And we used to, I don't know if you're familiar with the drinking water standards, but we used to analyze for phenols in milligrams per liter before the days of these trace organics. But the whole idea is that these things get attenuated in water, these organics. There are things like adsorption. There are things like the longer the travel time is, or transit time gives a chance for this degradation. So, for example, in Fresno, we've seen this only very close to percolation ponds, where we're percolating water like within 500 feet or whatever. But when we get away from there, that means the effluent is older. It's taken a longer time. Then these things are not present. So what it is there are certain organics that we see if we percolate, particularly at high rate, and we test for it, like total organic carbon is a test like total dissolved solids, but it's organic. And we know that this can break down. It breaks down due to biological processes, due to adsorption, due to oxidation. It would be like if this was in an ag area like Fresno, some farmer pumps the water up and irrigates with it, for example. These are all things that break this down. But the worst thing about looking at these things is they don't have any drinking water standards, so no one knows what it means. It just know if we analyze it out to 0.00000 whatever, it'll show up. But an old guy like me kind of thinks, well, hey, if you take the cap off the bottle, you know, you got your water sanitizer, it's going to fall in there out of the air. I'm not kidding. So this is minute amounts of stuff we're talking about.
Yeah. Thank you. That kind of leads into my other question, which was about evapotranspiration rates here. And do you kind of do an estimate, an average of how much goes in the air versus how much goes in?
Well, we have standard values, and they've been developed for years by the California Department of Water Resources and some of the universities like Cal Poly, where, you know, has Dr. Burt and his people do this kind of work. So we have values that we've had for years for certain crops. And, you know, most of these are from a foot and a half or 2 feet to maybe 3 foot range of consumptive use per year. And this water largely goes up in the air, you know.
So this might be a dumb question then, but how does it get recharged if it's up in the air? Does it just settle back down and in, or go into the atmosphere and go
away? What it is when we irrigate in most areas, we have a thing called irrigation efficiency. And if you had an irrigation efficiency like in the old days when we didn't have sprinklers and didn't have a drip and didn't have dead leveling and all this stuff, like when I was a kid, have furrow irrigation or basin irrigation, the irrigation efficiency is like 50% in Fresno area, 40% means if it's 50%, 50% of the water percolates, 50% goes up in the air. We use sprinkler irrigation now. It's like common have 65, 70% irrigation efficiency means one quarter of it or one third of it goes
Right. Very interesting. Thank you.
Madam
Mr.
Ripley,
I had one question. I'm sorry, Mr. Miller.
Just real quick, I didn't know if this was well understood. I'm sure it probably was, but for the ag exchange areas, for every drop of water that is applied for agricultural purposes, you leave the drop in the ground that you're not pumping from the ground.
Right.
And so you don't have to percolate it down. You leave it in the ground because you're not withdrawing it.
That's why I was asking the evapotranspiration question, because does it go up in the air and not drop in the ground?
Right, because you don't need it to, because you left it in your well. You didn't pump it out. So
yep,
it's a deferred use.
Good, thanks. Okay, and just one last one for Mr. Ripley, and that was about when you were talking about static head and dynamic head. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of members in our audience aren't engineers, but tell me if I'm right about this. It's about sustainability and energy costs for pumping water, and that's why it's important? Or could you elaborate further? When you were talking about your great graphic showing the height differences in pumping across town, why is it important?
Yeah, the static head in pumping represents the base elevation that the pump has to, I call it, work against or push against. The pressure discharge required by the pump is a minimum, the static head, and that is set by the elevation of the pipe or the elevation that the pumping system is attempting to achieve. Now, if there are, let's say, 5,000 pumps, and theoretically they could all turn on at the same time. So those 5,000 pumps for a period of time are literally fighting with each other for capacity in that pipe. That's called a dynamic head. And we can calculate that. We know we can do analysis on what the probability of X number of pumps being on at one point in time, and then it becomes a dynamic head, which the dynamic head is a fluctuating head. It changes over time. The dynamic head at 4 in the afternoon may be 50 feet. At 3 in the morning, it'll probably be near zero. And it's important. The reason the static head is important from a sustainability standpoint is really two things. The first one is anytime you pump against head, it takes electricity, it takes energy. So that pump has to deliver or use that amount of energy to fight that head, whatever it is, if it's static head or total dynamic. Total dynamic includes the static and the dynamic head. But the static represents the minimum head. So you want to get that as low as you can. So that's the starting point for all the pumps. Now, for the pumps at a higher elevation, this is all kind of a moot point because they're all above it. The key element is what is the head for what I call them the shoreline pumps. These are the pumps that theoretically at elevation zero or near zero. And that's what we're worried about. And what we're trying to do
from a maintenance standpoint, is have every pump in the town be the same model. So the maintenance truck has one or two spare pumps, and that's it's interchangeable for every instance.
Does the board? Yeah, we need a break, 10-minute break, and then we'll open it up to public comment and questions. We're starting public comment. Please begin. Oh, wait a minute. No, don't quite begin. We're going to need to quiet down so we can start public comment, please. I'd just like to remind everybody this evening that please be respectful of all the speakers and the audience. And if you have a motion about the speaker, this is the best thing to do. Just use your hands. And let's keep the clapping down because it just disrupts it, and I can hear everything in the back of the room. So let's keep it cool, and let's go. Mr. Bearden.
Don Bearden, Prohibition Zone. I'm against the STEP-STEG system. I don't want a septic tank in my backyard anymore, and your system ensures a septic tank in my yard forever. The groundwater table in my yard is approximately 3 feet right now. I have a pump in my septic tank already that is pumping into the groundwater. It is a low head pump, and if it quits, my septic tank floods. If my low head pump had to be changed to a high head pump for a STEP-STEG system, then a failure of the check valve would back up everybody else's effluent in my septic tank and eventually into the house. A STEP-STEG system transfers a wastewater treatment system from out of town to my backyard. I vote for a gravity collection system with a treatment plant anywhere but in my backyard. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next speaker, please, Ms. Owen.
Lindy Owen, Prohibition Zone. I'm sure that Mr. Bearden's situation with his septic tank and all the other low-lying areas will be part of what is addressed when they look at the step collection and how to make those things work. So hopefully he'll have a little patience and understand the huge difference between putting raw sewage next to our drinking supply underground where we can't see it leaking, which will affect all of our drinking supply in a terrible way if we do have the leaks that eventually do happen. I wanted to say that it's kind of amazing. I'm really thrilled to see the beginnings of this process coming forward because I think the science is being put to good use. We're looking at what we can do to do an alternative system. I wanted to sort of say it's sort of sad that it's been 7 years that we originally wanted to do a natural system, and maybe it's a seven-year cycle. We're coming around, and now we're going to hopefully be looking at a chance to build it in the right location. Pipes versus one that is just leaving the solids in the tank with a liquid going through. And that I was a little confused if that's still, those are both options that we're looking at. And also, is the large pipe collection conventional system set up to be looked at? I wondered if there's been any talk about nitrate credits where, as we phase projects in, we could actually look at how much we're eliminating our nitrate loading and begin to work with regional board as that would be a way to at least have a discussion about how many nitrates we're not adding to the issue. And if we can do that in portions of town as we build the project, I wondered if that was at all anything that they'd figured to work with regional board on. And then I guess the phasing, I sort of understood how we would be phasing it, but if he had anything more to say about the difference, the 10-year phasing period or any ideas as to what that might look like. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Owen. Mr. Ripley, would you like to answer those questions? Did you? I have written them down if you need them. Mr. Allaby?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, Rob, I'm going to ask for your help and make sure I don't miss anything here. The point of confusion of the step versus grinder, we've been tasked with looking at alternative collection systems. Step is not the only pressure type of collection system. There are alternative collection systems that include transporting all solids. The step collection involves interceptor tanks, also known as septic tanks, that retain on-site the solids to the tune of probably 90%+. So we're going to look at both try to develop cost estimates, as well as take a look at the gravity collection system as the baseline.
He also asked about nitrate credits.
I'm going to let Mike address that one, because Mike is just paid for a 40-ton load of ammonium nitrate,
I am not a terrorist.
I made a comment earlier today when we were talking after we got done speaking with some of the agricultural people, and I said when Bauman was talking to them and he talked about the average nitrogen contribution would be about 50%, we estimate, of their annual demands under normal conditions, I said I was looking at the guys in the room and I saw the gears turning, because the price of fertilizer is directly related to the price of oil, and we all know where that's gone. So if we're going to cut their fertilizer use in half, there's a direct financial incentive for these guys to really give this some strong consideration, and that's really what it boils down to.
Very good point. Thank you. And Mr. Ripley, the last question was about phasing. Are you at that point? Can you answer that?
Yeah. Are we still up or we're down?
Your slides are down.
My pictures are on the back. The graphics behind me address the phasing issues in different color. Los Osos Valley Road, there's another 500 feet. There are some 500 acre feet of demand out there somewhere. It can either go to the east off the basin or into the community. We feel we're real comfortable. We have a nice home for 1,000 acre feet in the agricultural exchange. It's the final 500 feet that's there, but it's going to be harder to get. So that kind of drove the three-phase program. We tied it into the three-phase program on the collection because we wanted to get phase one to get the real obvious hot spots, both in nitrate and high groundwater. Phase two will get the obvious high groundwater and nitrate hot spots along Los Osos Valley Road. Then we see phase three is really infill.
Good. Okay.
And the reason I went to two phases on the treatment plant, because as a designer of treatment plant, three phases is kind of funky. Two phases, you can do mirror images, and it makes a logical facility. Also, phase one of the treatment plant, we may have adjustments in generation factors. We may say, 1.4 MGD will go up 0.7 or 0.7, but, 5 years from now, maybe we want 0.9, 0.8, or 0.4. I don't know.
Thank you. Okay, Director Sennett?
I'd like to go back to the first speaker's concern about what if a check valve fails and, there's no pressure and it allows the line pressure to enter in, through his collection line. Is that a potential problem, and have we addressed that? How safe are we in that respect?
As an engineering exercise, we look at all failure modes. My first response is check valves. Check valves do fail. We have two check valves. My next response is SCADA, or instrumentation and control, SCADA, S-C-A-D-A, supervisory control and data acquisition, am I right? My last presentation to this board, I talked about Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
If his system were to back up, it'll hit the high-level alarm and the operating responsible operator will be notified within seconds.
Okay. Okay, thanks. Next speaker, please. Mr. Perlman, are you speaking tonight?
I was just standing there admiring the graphics, but there does seem to be, I do have a question, so I'll bring it up, which is part of the redundancy, part of the check valving, part of the issue of crossing two creeks. Am I seeing in one of the designs what I would call a safety shunt, which would be... there seems to be a line in the pipes. I'm sorry that I'm addressing the experts here, but as relates to the creek, we would need some kind of earthquake stability and overflow cisterns of some kind, and I'm sure those are planned in there. But I would like to both a price solution. Because there are some advantages to that. It looks like our process is really working beautifully. We should be able to communicate this. One of the things that the Water Board doesn't have, apparently is reluctant to use, is our beautiful multicolored contour map, which is clearly the right one because it corresponds to what we really know is where the groundwater does appear during the rainy season. So... We're well on our way. This is a beautiful thing. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Perlman. Mr. Alibi?
Chris Alibi, Los Osos. let's say we have an unimaginable act of God that lets us go to on-site systems. Okay, take the Piranha system, for instance. You can do the entire community, if everything goes wrong, for $25 million. Okay, for Los Osos, that's pocket change. They spent that much on lawsuits and other assorted nonsense. These surveys, okay, all of this goes out the window. You've got, on page one here, elevation that's in the front yard, area. That doesn't change. Current land use, neighboring land uses, availability, cost for land, nothing. It's on your own property. Proximity to storage sites, don't have any. View shed impacts, no more than it is now. Prevailing wind doesn't matter. Flood potential, on and on. All of this has nothing to do with anything. All of these sites here that they recommend, all of these are very expensive central collection projects, and I have no idea what the projected costs are. Site evaluation, same deal, doesn't apply. It's all in your own yard. It's your own problem. So that's about all I have to say about that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Alibi.
Madam President?
Yes. Mr. Miller?
Hi. I think one, and I certainly expected that topic to come up, and it is an important topic. One of the things that the district is doing is you have hired two consultants. One, of course, is the Ripley team to look at alternatives for a centralized collection system, but you've also hired in-situ engineering to look at some of the on-site options and what the cost of those options are. Obviously, that the district is piloting a technology right now. Results are coming in and are forthcoming, but the jury's still out. At least I would believe the jury's still out on that technology. And so the beauty of what I think Ripley's approach is that it's feasible, and it can be looked in an incremental fashion as opposed to something that you had to do all at once. However, from a regulatory standpoint, for the regional board's perspective, I think it's very important that we show the ability and the concept to sewer the whole thing as a strong first step as you also look at on-site technologies. But just so the community knows that your board has hired both types of consultants and are looking at both sides of the coin.
Things that we're looking at. One is the phasing part. In other words, and also the step stag advantages is that if we do get a mitigation measure, for example, that the Piranha or similar technology may provide, we're looking to consider that as part of that phasing impact. And without having the regulatory board's impact, as Mr. Miller has stated, you know, these questions still need to be answered. And we'll roll that out, and we'll be able to explain it so that it's coherent. But yes, both present interesting situations right now. So thanks.
Great. Thank you. Ms. Calhoun?
Oh, yeah. I wonder if Mr. Ripley could clarify, perhaps with the little map, and how the phase system would work. If I understand that map right, it looks, I mean, there's little dotted lines running around like little demented mice. Is there an idea to kind of run the pipe follow the least line of least resistance? That I understand. But was the idea to start hooking up to step stag, I suppose, in a certain area and then have the pipe wander out to time and then come back in and do another area or something? I'm not clear, and perhaps maybe he could just sort of point on the map how this phasing is going to look like as it moves through the town.
Thank you, Ms. Calhoun. Mr. Ripley, can you use your map, your paper map? Will it work? Yeah.
Guys, want to shoot this one?
Okay.
There it is on the screen.
Okay. That's the other map.
The phasing aspect, this is a very busy graphic, and I apologize for that. This is a simpler version of the same.
Can you stand here so that everyone can see? Yes. The collection, the backbone collection system is considered to be two phases.
It's good, yeah.
Okay. Does that work?
Two masters is tough to serve.
Okay. This is the phase one that gets through the heart of the town. That's the low elevation route. Los Osos Valley Road is phase two. This cross connection will probably be a phase three. And the cross connection is part of the redundancy. And the comments about redundancy are well taken. As an engineer, I think all the engineers will agree with me. We operate on the assumption that if it can fail, it will. All we don't know is when. And we always operate on the assumption that it will always fail. We just don't know when. So if there was an earthquake in a critical segment, my idea is that if any critical segment of this system is inoperable, isolation valves can very quickly be closed, and the flows can be circumvented around it. It's very much like a internet network. If the traffic is too much on one
main collector and build a treatment plant and then hook up all of these houses first because they're in the hot spots.
Yes.
And then come back and hook these guys up maybe.
Yes, it'll extend. Yeah, I apologize. That's a very good point. There'll be collector lines coming into the main lines all on the single streets, but you need a close main line connection or main line pipeline to attach the local streets. Rob, do you have better language for that?
Yeah, Madam President, I think one of the things we'll want to do is just acknowledge that at this point we're looking at the backbone and the major concept, low-lying areas, high nitrate areas, and those bands of the community. I think what the speaker's really wanting is here are the phase boundaries. Here's this color phase one, this color phase two, and showing all the homes that would be in each phase. And we're not quite there yet. I think focusing on step stake and collection system technologies in the future presentations will be able to provide those exact phase boundaries, but concepts for today.
Great, thank you. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Ripley?
I just received these graphics yesterday. We have the phasing here.
Somebody hold that?
Yeah. I'm sorry. This answers the question. I'm sorry. I didn't realize I had this. Nitrate level mitigation by phase. This is the yellow line here. That's the phase one. And we've got these colored into different phases as different collection areas as part of the phase. And that fills in the blanks. Now, this is idealized. What's really going to happen is the collection is going to be phased close to the main lines. If there's no reason to extend a line down a street because there's no hot spot or everything's working fine, there's not high groundwater and everything's fine, we may defer that. And I would also say we are going to be investigating the largest step collection system that we know about. It's in Charlotte County, Florida. We are planning a trip. And in that situation, they do put mainline down streets, but they do not require connection. There, and it's a voluntary connection. And we're going to investigate that. And if there's not a motivating driver to connect the house, such as an elderly couple that just doesn't want to participate, that we may have a deferral program to time of sale. So we're going to come forward with those sorts of recommendations. We're going to outline exactly what they've done. And as far as I know, the head count is 5,000 houses on the system now, and it's going to go to 30,000. So we're looking very closely at a couple communities to how they've addressed these sorts of issues, particularly the phasing.
Great. Mr. Payne.
Good evening, board, staff, people at home and here. I'm Bruce Payne, resident of Los Osos. I want everybody to remember what Mr. Ripley just said about when it happens. When you have a gravity collection. The other thing, he was saying something about 500 acre feet they didn't know what to do with. I think it was 500 acre feet, maybe it was 500 million gallons, I don't know, 500,000 gallons. Point being, we have septic tanks in low groundwater areas that are actually diluting the groundwater nitrates beneath it. And because of our sand filtration we have that works so well here. So possibly, and like he was just saying, maybe we don't have to hook up some of these good operating septic tanks with a lot of sand between, what do they call it, something zone? I can't never remember that. Anyway, when you have unsaturated sand between the groundwater and the effluent and the leach field, it denitrifies before it gets there, or at least it less nitrate than what's in the groundwater below it, proved by Black and Veatch. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Payne. Mr. Swanson?
Keith Swanson, Los Osos. I guess the first thing, it's probably an understatement, is Los Osos is unique. To me, equates to non-conventional, which is the way that we should be going. And it just, when you brought up the Broderson, and I know that this has been brought up before, is that the leach rate and all of that, and the fact that potentially Chuck and my home would be completely flooded in a few days. Now it sounds like a few hours, but I'd like him to, one, explain the difference between recharge and disposal, because that's what was being sold to us, as it was a disposal field, not a recharge field, but it actually was recharging the aquifer so that eventually we could drink it. What would have been useful is to know what the acreage sizes of all these sites were, because you're asking the question as far as lot, the size, and we don't have any idea how big each one of these properties are, so it'd be nice to know. One of the things that's a little confusing to me is the negotiations on the closed session today was regarding one of the properties already, when we're still looking and investigating the criteria for all properties, and I just hope that we haven't dispelled that, because it starts to smell a little bit of what Tri-W ended up being. I'd also would like to see you convey not only to the Regional Water Quality Control Board the tech memos, but also to the county and inform all of them of what's going on and to also educate them of the other technologies and what's going on. Also, is a PowerPoint going to be available to the public so that, because I'd like to have that one particular graphic. And also there was a mention on-site. I like on-site if it could be done that way, but it just may not be practical for all of Los Osos. But the thought of phasing it in and going to the expense of putting it on-site to make it comply and then have to not use that in the future, it might be a waste.
Diversity, but it's getting close. I won't name it. I'll just say it's Stanislaus County. But we have a recharge versus disposal issue there. And from my perspective, I look at the application. The wastewater engineer and guys like Ken Schmidt, and we're in the recharge business and dispersing effluent. Application rate is just so fundamental. I mean, that's where we start. It tells us how much land we need. I have a little statement about Los Osos for the prior design versus this design. It's 4 feet a day versus 3 feet a year. And that's the difference that we're looking at in terms of application rates. Now, a recharge versus disposal, from my perspective, there's a set of regulations for recharge the Department of Health Services has with respect to groundwater recharge of potable basins. And disposal, we've got these AB 885 regulations that are coming down. It doesn't matter if it's a 200-gallon-per-day leach field or a 2-million-gallon-per-day leach field. If it's subsurface, those regs apply. And, people argue, well, those regs are in draft form. Well, as an operating engineer, I don't care if they're draft. That's the standard that's there now. It's almost moot as to whether or not the state has approved them into code because they're going to be code sooner or later. So the distinction between recharge and disposal. Ken, can you help me?
Well, let me do that. Yeah. I'll be a little more exact, Dana, since I'm not a sanitary engineer, because what it is in the old days, guys looked at effluent as not as a resource, but something we want to get rid of it, so they call it disposal, whatever you do with it. When I work with people, I tell them to quit using that terminology. We're not trying to dispose of it. We're trying to manage it. And water's a resource. So we don't use the word disposal. So what we're basically talking about is recharge versus irrigation. And let's talk about recharge for a minute. How do you do recharge? On the land surface, through basins or whatever? Well injection. Inject it right down a well, right in the aquifer. Inject it in a vado zone, which is what this project was. Leach fields, but they're in the vado zone. Well, I'm talking about how difficult these recharge regulations are when you do it starting at the land surface, not when you start down there in the vado zone or in the groundwater, because those get progressively worse and worse and harder and harder. So the hardest thing we would have to try to do is if we wanted to inject this in a well. And we have to get all kinds of permits for, we have, there's an EPA injection well program and do all that. So we're not really talking recharge versus disposal. We're talking recharge versus irrigation. That's what we're talking about. And we shouldn't consider either one of them a disposal unless you guys have so much water you want to get rid of it, and it doesn't matter to you. But the word's called management, I think.
It's good to be Mr. Sheik, Dr. Sheik.
I would like to add another word, and that's beneficial reuse. It's neither discharge, neither recharge nor...
Good evening, everybody. Peter Brewer, Los Osos. I guess the question I have is the comment that Julie brought up about the pipes crossing the creek twice. Again, these creeks are considered impaired by the Water Board. They're considered impaired with nitrates and also with pathogens. So when those pipes cross those bodies of water and spill, I'm not sure what happens. Where did they spill to? Well, eventually they go into the bay, which is also considered an impaired body of water, and a marine estuary. So Los Osos is very unique I don't know of many places that have that issue. And because we have that problem, AB 85 doesn't even apply to us. We can't. There are some aspects of that that are actually beneficial, and from what I've told, we can't even access them because we have these impaired bodies of water here. So we sort of have a situation where if you're going to cross the creeks with these pipes, I think the water board's going to have something to say about that. anyway, just thought I'd bring that up. Thank you.
Madam President.
Mr. Miller.
I'll just have a quick comment about that. Certainly a creek crossing, I mean, I know there are certainly local examples of creek crossing of sewage force mains. I think there are potentially construction mitigations that could be used, sleeving it as opposed to a single pipe. Obviously, the redundant crossings is another idea that if there's ever a failure, you have a rapid response. So certainly there's some mitigations that can be identified. But I think, you know, the speaker's right, it's something very early in the process from the Coastal Commission to environmental and everything else to really take head on how you're going to accomplish those two crossings.
Thank you. That's a good point to keep in mind. Okay. Mr. Cooper.
I'm not sure. Oh, there you go. There you go. On the screen. Hi. Okay. Oh, thank you.
Okay, keep going. I'm sorry. We can go. We can
how many Los Osos residents does it take to hold up a sign?
Too many. Obviously, let's bring it down just a little. There you go. Okay.
Hi, Bo Cooper. This is one of Dana Ripley's signs. I wanted to point out that what it is, it's a rating actually of 8 different candidate sites for the wastewater treatment facility. The criteria that you've seen before that Dr. Sheik was talking about, elevation, area size, neighbor use, view shed impact, prevailing winds, flood potential, groundwater elevation, 15 different criteria. And these lines, these things in here are the different weights from a 0 to 10. What I really want to point out is that number 1, 2, and 3 are the ones I'm pointing to now. The ones right next to the Andre site, number 1, 2, 3, and then the Andre site, so are 4 and 5 in terms of rated 0, the worst. And we understand why it blocks off the rock. Also, the prevailing winds is 0. I'm concerned about that in terms of odor and smell and things like that. That actually was my original objection to the entire project. As it grew, I got to object to the unaffordability, but I was really concerned about the smells. I'm wondering if that prevailing wind, and it's only at, the 0 is the only at Tri-W site. Everything else is a 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10. Everything else is great. So I'd like to ask Mr. Ripley about that, too. So I just want to really emphasize that Tri-W is the worst of the preliminarily evaluated sites. I think it's important for the people of Los Osos to know. Thank you. Thank you, sign holders.
Thank you, Mr. Cooper, and your assistants. Director Tacker.
Mr. Cooper, just for your for everyone's benefit, in 2001, the EIR identified on page 310, identified in table 8-4 that the Tri-W site came in 4th out of 5 locations. So it never was the top pick. So I can't wait till we get environmental consultant looking at your selections.
Since I'm the guilty party in terms of the rankings and ratings, I was the leader of that effort. Let me say that the ratings or the scorings from 0 to 10 on each of these criteria is based on several things. First of all, if we have objective criteria, such as distance, for example, or depth, or thickness, things like that that can be found in the literature or in the various published reports. We use that as a basis and then convert that to the rating from 0 to 10. In cases where there's subjective criteria, such as, for example, surrounding land uses or neighboring land uses, we just look at the aerial maps and look at what's being used in that area and make a judgment on that basis. So it's, in other cases, professional judgment based on many projects we have done in the past and compared alternative sites, alternative ways of doing things. That's what we have used. So that's, we take responsibility for those scorings, basically, for doing that. So if they are wrong, it's our professional incompetence and vice versa. The wind situation is definitely an objective criterion. We've got data. We've got data for many, many years for this area as well as any other areas in California, fortunately, and it's all published. And we know that the prevailing winds are west-northwest or northwest. During most months, it's west-northwest, and some months, it's northwest. In other words, it comes from the ocean and blows through and toward the mountains. And that being the case, the plants that are cited, anything that's after B, C, D, E, F, G, H, and I, are downwind of the city. The smells will blow away from the city, if there are any. Whereas sites A and B, Tri-W and Iacano, are within the community. The winds will blow to some residences downwind of them. So that's why.
The engineers have approached the Regional Water Quality Control Board on any of these issues just to feel them out, for lack of a better word. Or if they haven't, do they plan to, and if so, when? I was also wondering, could small community collection systems be used in low groundwater areas to prevent people from having septic tanks in their front or backyards, to have smaller collection areas first before it gets pumped from there? Another question is, can residents pick up the evaluation sheets at the CSD office, or could they possibly go out with the next Bear Pride? And then everyone out there watching and listening at home, please get involved and be heard.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Scheib. Mr. Ripley?
Okay, I'll take those one at a time. Contact with the water board. I think that's important. It was not in our scope, was it, Rob?
I think so.
Was it?
Yeah, some contact.
Okay, yeah. Some contact. Yeah, I think our critical point was this event tonight, because there's no sense in approaching the regulators until we have some consensus with the community as this is the direction that we want to go. So I think this is important tonight. I think the tech memos can be forwarded to all interested parties, Public Works, Water Board. I would also hope the DHS, Department of Health Services, the Santa Barbara office. I would hope the Water Quality State Water Resource Control Board, your funding people up there. You know, it doesn't cost a lot to print that tech memo and get that distributed.
Right. Madam President, I would agree with that. I think in terms of the concepts, certainly I would expect that the regional board staff will not be surprised that the site selection is recommending the types of sites that we're looking at. I think they've had plenty of forecasting that that's what's coming. In terms of the overall process with Ag Exchange, yes, we have mentioned in our meetings that we are looking seriously at a beneficial reuse project as opposed to high-rate disposal, and they've already raised some of their issues, like can you secure the adequate amount of land to do that and those types of issues. So I don't think there'll be any surprises, and they will, I'm sure, have written comments that come back to us once they see these tech memos.
With respect to permittability, I think that is an issue as to, you know, if we're doing anything here that may create a regulatory problem. And I think Ken Schmidt is probably have the most regulatory experience of probably anyone in the state of California in improving these things. And I think Ken and I are both confident that provided we do everything at agronomic rates, there's no reason or there's no possibility that the permit could have any issue, quite frankly. And if you look at the existing permit that you have, that the CSD has, I mean, there are two effluent specs. One is for subsurface and one is for ag, and they're... This is already permitted from an effluent quality standpoint. It doesn't reflect Title 22, but it is already permitted for this at great length. We've talked about zero discharge, but what does zero discharge mean? It means that we're not proposing any subsurface or surface discharge other than the agronomic application of effluent to ag lands and irrigation lands. We are not seeking a discharge to the creek. And what are we going to do in the winter? We're going to have surface storage. And that requires land. We don't know precisely where it is. The site we're looking at may be able to have a significant portion of the storage. But based on meetings we've had as recently as today, we feel there's ample land available for surface storage in close proximity to the treatment sites that we're looking at. And there's also ample land if we ever run into the situation where we have effluent beyond what we have plumbing for, so to speak. So from that standpoint, we think we can have some agreements with landowners that will satisfy the requirements of the water board. And they're going to want assurances that we do have the land availability for the agronomic rates. And I believe that's readily attainable. Second item, I'm sorry, it was cluster tanks. Again, I'm going to repeat myself. For this phase of our work, we're going to assume no clustering for budget purposes because that'll give us a conservative estimate. But if there are certain locations due to high groundwater where clustering makes sense, we have a location for the cluster tank. I would even entertain the idea of putting tanks in public right-of-way under streets. I mean, I'm looking at traffic-rated tanks if we have to, with tie-downs literally in high groundwater areas. In the event they're pumped in high groundwater, they will not pump out of the ground. So I think we'll be a little more creative in the subsequent phases than we are at this phase, but I want to assure the residents that if there is an opportunity for cluster, I want to know about it.
Great, thank you. Next speaker. Oh, I'm sorry, Vice President.
Mr. Ripley, Chuck, Director Sustaini and I had our monthly meeting with the Regional Board staff yesterday, Harvey Packard, and we did mention your tech memos and the possibility of you coming and maybe presenting to them next month, July 6th, July 7th, I think. Remember what the date was? I think it was the 7th. Maybe the 6th. Maybe the 5th. Yeah, maybe it was the 5th. Anyway, consider that as maybe as a possibility. And they were interested, of course, in hearing what you had to say. And that would give us another 4 weeks of information by then to present.
Yes, and to answer one of the prior questions, we will make this presentation available to the district as well as we are leaving these exhibits with the district.
Front office display. Mr. Dugan.
Okay, Dave Dugan, Los Osos. Looking at the map for sites, automatically, anything next to the Irish Hills, we're going to have mitigation for earthquake because it's right along the Los Osos earthquake fault. So at least two sites, this may cost a little extra money, or we may not be able to mitigate that. I saw Andre 1 and 2. I just didn't even consider that. But the sites behind the cemetery, those are prime sites. And I look at those as a possibility. Let's go on further. Phasing, phase one, explored. There's going to be a lot of people saying, well, you can't go out of town. You got to cross a creek. It's done all the time, even if you have to go under the creek. So I don't think that's going to be our main problem. And I'm also looking at creating wetlands. If you think you're going to have extra water, well, let's think about getting an umbrella with... from other people, we can say, okay, we're not reusing, but we're not discharging, we're creating wetlands. And that's the best way to go with a lot of areas. I was even looking at Tri-W as a wetlands creation site too, if it's possible. We need to have recharge, and that's just reuse and try it up. You might fall into that area unless you need to sell it. But it also becomes a wetlands park, Audubon's lookout, boardwalk around it, even a little doggy thing. I thought I'd get you with that one. But, yeah, I like what I'm seeing so far, but the hydrology, I have a question about. I want our engineer, I know he knows more about it, does Ripley have a grasp on the true hydrology of this basin and how hard it is to recharge from outside from Los Osos Valley? I think that's a big problem because the other report said that we have an anomaly screening so we can't get recharged. If we leave all that water outside of town, what are we going to do? Where's our recharge going to come from? That's all.
And Madam President, you can pretty much guarantee that Spencer and Tim Cleath will be looking very carefully at whatever conclusions that were drawn from their reports. And so there will be peer review, abundant peer review associated with the groundwater aspects of this proposal.
Yeah, just I'd like to add, the best graphic that everybody keeps showing is that cross-section of the zones. And if you could put some locators on that, that might help too. That'd be great for the office. I mean, that's where I get it, the cross-section of all the zones of water. Now that they all come up to the surface out by the cemetery. I think that's helpful.
Madam President, the other thing I would point out is that for those areas that are currently irrigated, even if they're pumping from a different zone, they're clearly using water from our basin, some zone. So we're deferring that water use. So even if it doesn't recharge down the line, there is a water resource that becomes available in those areas, and that's we can definitively say.
Very good point, yes. Would anyone else like to speak this evening on this topic? Mr. Barrow?
Thank you. It's beginning to feel a little fresher now that we're talking about the sites. Before it was all in closed session. Now we have it out in the open. We know what we're looking at, and that's helpful to everyone. It's also helpful that the consultants are so gracious in answering all the questions, and I appreciate that spirit very much. And I especially appreciated the comments by Mr. Smith, the hydrologist and farmer. And he, if I may, I can't quote him, but he said something to the effect of, "We shouldn't be using potable water for anything but drinking." Is that what you said? Aquifer. That's going to limit pumping wells on the east side. I think that's a big concern for me. And I think that has to have a special microscope on it. And I think that this gentleman is qualified to do that. He talked about the USGS lab over there. I don't think the testing samples that we're getting in the next week or so are going to be broad enough to really give us the information we need on the quality of the upper aquifer. The collection standard is a standard engineering. I'm very confident that the Ripley team can handle the collection. I'm more concerned about the phasing and if it's going to allow for some leeway if people don't want to connect. I'll point out to Scotts Valley and Felton, and they allowed some people to hook up and some not, so it might be interesting to explore that and see if there was an extra cost like Mr. Swanson mentioned. And then the nitrogen credits are very important, and the nitrogen management should be looked at as how much we're going to reduce the nitrogen we've been applying if we're not going to put septic tank effluent out there. And we need a credit, and that may allow the phasing more comfortably with regulatory if we are doing that. The other thing, a little bit more remote, is a CO2 exchange in Chicago. That bank allows you, if you're not producing CO2, and this goes to treatment in another section, which we'll discuss, allows you to change that, and you can sell those credits for money. So the least amount of treatment is the best. And with an ag exchange, you're going to use very little treatment because you're going to have, and I would like to ask this question to Dana Ripley, will you have a limit of 20, 25 milligrams per liter? Will you be able to give that much and reduce the treatment, therefore reducing the CO2?
Okay, Mr. Barrow.
I thank you very much.
Thank you.
Please don't scold me anymore. I'm going.
Oh, we're exhausted. Do you understand that?
Get some sleep, kid.
Mr. Miller, do you have any reply?
I think Dana might be a good one to take the discharge limit issue. I wouldn't conjecture as to what nitrogen standard would be put on it. Hopefully, if we can get 100% beneficial reuse and show the nutrient balance, no nitrogen removal would be required. But
I'll just, for your information, this is the second time I've had the same question today. The first time was through a group of very influential agricultural folks in Los Osos. And the question was exactly, how much nitrogen are you going to give us? It was not from a disposal standpoint. It was, how much are we going to get? Because as Mike said, the price of nitrogen fertilizer has probably doubled in the last year or more. And so it was kind of the reverse as to you know, how much do I need to remove? And quite frankly, you know, that's bombing. We don't want to remove any. Zero. And so the energy, you know, if you look at the design of the Tri-WMBR plant and look at the pumps and the horsepowers just for the recirculation loops to get the nitrification, that was a massive recirculation. I forget what the R was. R is a recirculation ratio. It was massive. Very energy intensive. I would say that our energy consumption for nitrogen removal is going to be zero. And if you ask me what today, it's going up because of the water conservation fixtures. It's generally in the 40 to 60 range. Now, you ask me for a fully nitrified effluent, that is, we've converted all the ammonia, all the organic nitrogen to nitrate. That's a fully nitrified effluent, which is what we're going to do. The total nitrogen will be in the range of 20 to 25 or thereabouts. Now, is that going to say that we're going to deliver 20 or 25 milligrams per liter to the farmer? Unfortunately, the answer is no. Because every time we move that water, every time we store it, we lose nitrogen naturally. So if you ask me, they asked me, well, what's the concentration going to be? I said, well, it's probably going to be in the range after it's been stored for 100 days plus or whatnot. The end product is probably going to be in the range of 10 to 20. They would probably like it to be in the range of 20 to 40. Because instead of 50% of the nitrogen, say, they could save 100%, but we lose it just by storing it. It interacts with the atmosphere. You understand the atmosphere is 70% nitrogen. So there are natural processes going on. Does that answer the question?
That's a good answer. Thank you very much. All right. Would anyone else, Mr. Margetson, would you like to speak? We do have another item on the agenda tonight, and I apologize for being short. We have to also go back to closed session, so I'm trying to keep it going.
Richard Margetson. There were nine sites shown tonight. There were nine sites shown on Tuesday at the Wastewater Committee meeting. The question was asked on Tuesday if there was a preference from these gentlemen for one of the sites at that point. There was no answer given. But Keith asked the question, and I asked it earlier. You had the Jacamazi property on closed session. Is that there? Are they leaning in that direction, and could they tell us? And could we get what the acreage of that property is? Because I didn't see it on any of the maps. Maybe it was there, and we just didn't see it. It was nice to hear, although it was briefly, water conservation. I'm just curious if these gentlemen know how dramatic a water wasters we really are here in Los Osos, and if they have that information and how that will play in their calculations. The deferral issue concerns me. I'm interested in how the state revolving fund, if that's the way you end up going, would deal with deferred hookups of existing properties. And then just the last question. One thing we got going for us concerning the creek issue is in November we'll have a supervisor who actually understands that you can cross a creek. Thank you.
Mr. Dr. Sheik?
Regarding the question of the Jacamazi site, We are looking at approximately 38 acres and possibly less, maybe between 35 and 38 acres. That, Dana?
Let me grab the deferral. The deferral issue, it's a conversation piece at this point. They really developed a concept in this other community, Charlotte County, Florida. And we want to investigate what that program is, how it works. That particular project, we understand, is all bootstrap financing. That is to say, they don't have outside funding. They totally fund based on connections, connection fees. And if you don't connect, there's still a standby fee.
Could you explain the standby fee?
A standby fee is a fee. We in the development business, we face that often, where a property will be, there'll be a benefit to the property that, let's say, a sewer line passes by or a water line. However, the property is not developed. In that situation, there is an increased value to the land, and for the utility to get compensated for that increased value, there may be a standby fee. There may be no actual physical connection, but there is a fee paid simply because the value of the land increases so substantially.
And Madam President, one quick point.
Mr. Miller?
When folks are thinking about the size of a property, just note that just because the parcel itself may be 80 acres doesn't mean that the district necessarily has to take all 80 acres. Public agencies have several processes available to them, such as an easement for specific purposes or what we call a public lot, which is essentially a subdividing property for a public agency to take smaller shares of property. So as you are looking at your APN maps, just note that we don't have to take the entire property in all situations.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Miller. Mr. Ripley?
I would just like to layer on to what Rob just said. Not only do you not have to take the entire property, but I caution you that any piece of property has a yield. That is to say, it's not 100% usable for whatever your purpose is. There are going to be creek setbacks, drainage setbacks, other uses. So if you look at a 38-acre parcel, there may be 10 acres that we've decided to set back for environmental reasons. You've got to be very cautious of that.
Great. Okay. Would anyone else like to speak this evening? Ms. Renshaw?
Pat Renshaw. Thank you. I know you guys are tired. I just had a few things. I hope that when they start putting the project together that they emphasize using solar, any alternative energies that are available to help offset some of the cost and make it easier and more sustainable. I like it. One thing I don't understand, though, if we're taking the nitrogen out, we have too much nitrates, but then we sell it to the farmer and then he puts it back into the ground when he waters. Does the water go, the water with the nitrates go back into the...
To see that. And I've been authorized by my client in the Central Valley to do the same. That is to build panels, solar power, so we can do some peak shaving. I'd like to do that in Los Osos. I'm a little hesitant to discuss it because of the intensity of sun here, but I think that's what we have to look at. But there is a prerequisite, in my opinion, for any analysis or looking at solar, and that is to get your power demand of your facility down as low as possible. And that's why I get back to my kilowatt hours per acre foot concept. Anything we look at kilowatt per hours per acre foot. And one of the advantages, the unsung advantage that I see big time that most people don't realize, is I believe that if you compare the power consumption on a kilowatt hour per acre foot basis of a conventional sewer plant relative to a step plant properly designed, it'll be a difference of 3-1. And if you compare that to an MBR plant, it'll be even, the difference will be even higher. So
And the reason I say that is because the lower you can get the power demand of that plant, the more viable the solar or fuel cell or any alternative energy concept becomes, because the production of, that you need out of that alternative power source is reduced correspondingly. And it's a huge factor. So when you talk about energy efficiency, you've got to look at, you know, like the mileage on your car. You're going to say, if you're going to go from San Francisco to Los Angeles, you know, you can do it in 50 gallons or 10 gallons.
Very good. Thank you. Okie doke. We're bringing this back to the board right now. Thanks, everybody, for your excellent questions and your excellent comments. Very appreciated. Very good input. Does the board have any more questions or comments at this time? Director Tacker?
I'm just hoping we can get the PowerPoint on our website. I think everybody would like to see that. And I'm excited about putting those posters up in the district office for people to come down and take a look. So, good.
That's great. Yes. Anybody else? Okay, do we need a motion, or we're just accepting the report? Do we need a motion? No. We're just accepting the report and having the discussion, and look forward to the tech memos next week, and we'll get everything online for everybody, and can't thank you enough. We're going to take a five-minute break before the next item. Everybody, is everybody ready? Yes, and I hope to God. You're gonna have to go after it, ain't you? Oh, yeah. Good evening, everybody. This is the second item that we're having on tonight's agenda. Every goals of regulatory compliance, fiscal solvency, and the implementation of a sustainable, comprehensive water resource program cannot be realized without a reorganization that includes a new structured collaborative process. As the lead agency, LOCSD recognizes that even with a perfect plan, without the cooperation, assistance, and participation of other agencies, stakeholders, public, and the community, a positive outcome is tenuous. It is in this spirit that we request assistance in the form of special legislation that would provide a vehicle that protects all parties while assuring successful outcomes. Why a resolution? The resolution is just a method of demonstrating that the district has intent and promise and commitment for a process to be developed that would allow and encourage cooperative and collaborative relationships and builds trust between elected officials, regulators, the community, and the public. We really want to get past the past, and we're looking for everybody to get involved. The resolution makes a commitment to take the necessary steps to develop the cooperative and collaborative relationships for the successful design and construction of a wastewater system acceptable to the community. This is the text of the resolution, and I don't know at this late hour if you want me to read the whole resolution aloud. What is the pleasure of the board? Do you want me to read it all aloud? Or it was on the draft, was on the table? Pardon me? Is that required? I'm just going to put it on the screen and let you know that there's, and describe each paragraph and know that there's copies. And if the board has additions or suggestions, they need to tell me. But whereas on today's date, LOCSD adopts a resolution requesting the SAM, that in February we adopted the first resolution. That's what this is about. And this paragraph here has to do with all of the things that we've done since October. It's a listing of all of those items, of working tirelessly towards awarding a contract to update the wastewater project facility plan, and we've done work on the wells, and we've done work to reduce nitrates, and we've done voluntary septic management, and we've installed the piranha, et cetera, et cetera. Most of you who are in the room or listening at home know most of the things that we've done, but this is a paragraph that describes all those things. And again, reiterating our commitment
to take the necessary steps to develop the cooperative and collaborative relationships. And this is important, that the LOCSD board believes that the community will be collectively harmed for the foreseeable future by a failure to rise above the divisive conflicts and to seek compromises. And we want a we want an outcome that can be considered a victory by all. We're interested in full participation. And we, both the Los Osos Community Services District and the county, both agree that dissolution would provide and produce many harmful unintended consequences, and where we are remain undeterred in our commitment to deliver a timely and prudent wastewater system. So completion of public works projects of this magnitude require close collaboration of all involved agencies, and the county of San Luis Obispo has lots of experience with large-scale public works projects, and which would provide an opportunity for us, the Community Services District, to leverage that experience for the benefit of our community. So, and then this CSD, and to provide input with regard to a comprehensive project, agree to actively seek support from the state and regional boards on behalf of the CSD to hold enforcement actions and fines related to this matter in abeyance, and agree to collaborate with the Los Osos CSD to develop options for addressing the district's current funding obligations, and to work with us to obtain community input in support of a wastewater system. The action requested is to approve the resolution, and I'm opening it up, well, first to the board for questions or comments on the text, or Mr. Blesky or Mrs. Biggs, anybody who wants to say anything about the resolution? Mrs. Biggs?
Well, there were some changes that I think were supplied. I guess it would be helpful to know whether you're going to, as you go forward, whether you're adopting the resolution with those changes or without.
Okay. I'd like to read the changes right now. There were just a few changes, and I don't know if the table had the changes. They're just small text changes from what I just showed you. But it's the fourth paragraph down. Whereas the LOCSD Board of Directors believes that the community will be collectively harmed and in the immediate and foreseeable future by a failure to rise above divisive conflicts. So next paragraph, adding these lines, where the CSD Board of Directors seeks an outcome that is accepted by all parties as fair, reasonable, and in the best interest of the community. The next paragraph, where both the LOCSD and the county agree that dissolution may produce many harmful, adding, and costly unintended consequences. The next paragraph is, the Board of Directors is unwavering, that's the additional word, in its commitment to deliver a timely wastewater project. The third to the last paragraph, fourth to the last paragraph, adding the word team to technical advisory. And the last paragraph, adding the word agree that work will be, adding those words, that and will be. So is that, I hope that's the best way to do it at this late hour, but I can go over the screen again if you'd like to see it. So while we take public comment, I could go back and start over again. So it's about a two-page resolution. And again, some of the board members have been visiting the county, and we get the sense that they wanted more specific resolution than the one we gave them in February. And many of you have heard comment about that. So we thought that we would want, this would be a good way to renew our commitment and restate our commitment to the collaborative and collective process towards a solution that for our community, what's best for us. So I open it up to the board at this time. Director Tacker.
There's in the second paragraph, the word implementation, it seems to be part of the title of septic tank management program, and it's not. So I don't know if the word comes out or if it just doesn't need to be capitalized. Do you see that?
Yes. Okay. In the paragraph, Mr. Blesky, are you catching these changes? Or Ms. Biggs?
Yes, I...
Second paragraph, it's really should read a voluntary community septic tank management program.
So community and implementation...
Community is concurrent with in that whereas clause, not
which,
concurrent to.
Oh, good on your English, aren't you?
I majored in it. It's a sickness. I'm sorry.
Got it. First, that's the second paragraph again, whereas concurrent with its requests for outside assistance.
Okay, Mr. Allaby, would you like to say some words?
yeah, Chris Allaby, Los Osos. The idea here sounds good, but I'm afraid that I guess I'll refer to them as the other side or the power of darkness, whatever you want to call them, are going to be working behind the scenes and up front and at these meetings to constantly undermine all of this. And I'd be very careful and watch your step.
Willoughby? Yes. Who else would like to speak on the resolution? Mr. Dugan?
Dave Dugan, Los Osos. Septic System Management Program required in the basin plan. First, before you even sink a test well, hasn't been done. The county was supposed to start that first. I think they were given 6 years right up front to start a program as well as get the community sewered. They failed to do it. I think perhaps I would only look at them as permitting administration and financial administration. I would keep them in their place as a responsible party in that area. We should maintain lead agency status at all times so we can choose site and system. And we know the regional board is the trustee agency. This is not a CEQA document, but it's pointing in that direction. The basin plan clearly states that we have to start with the septic system maintenance program. That's the first step. Now, letting them in on site or system would be fraught with danger. We can't. This is simple enough and plain enough. But they're going to try to work it, or somebody's going to try to work it to where they get positioned to take power, because power is money, and this is all about millions, hundreds of millions of dollars. So, yes, be very careful what you enter into. But I would keep that distance. They are a responsible party. They've always been the responsible party, but we are the lead agency because we are the community it involves. And they still have to go to the property owners for money, first and foremost, regardless of what's presented to the community. Thank you. 2 minutes, not bad.
Thank you, Mr. Dugan. Ms. Cooper?
Yes, Lacey Cooper. Well, this is encouraging and is the best to, you know, get us a good project, a good environmentally sound and affordable project. So I think by talking with them, they'll start to realize this and help us. So this is a good start or a good continuation. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Cooper. Ms. Watson?
Elaine Watson, Los Osos. I want to, I agree with Lacey Cooper. I congratulate you on this resolution. This is a very good step in the right direction. And of course, we know that you're going to negotiate well and you're going to get the system that we need. And also, I want to congratulate you on doing what you said you were going to do. We've got a plan now, or at least we're working on a plan and with a project down the road, and it's coming together finally, and that's wonderful. It's finally happening. So I want to thank you for that. And also to let you know that if we need a 218 vote, I certainly am behind that. And I've talked to other people who are too. So we want you to know that we're there for you with that too. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Watson. Who else would like to speak? Ms. McPherson.
Good evening, board. I know it's late. And that you're tired. I think this is a very important piece of peacemaking. I know that the community leaders, regulators, and agencies, they all recognize that this is an important step in the right direction. And I think as you move forward to develop a structured process, it's really important to do things differently than the last, what was it, five times. It's very important to look very closely at how you can structure the process and work together, perhaps even with professionals, to structure a process where everyone has input and we don't wait till the end with people standing and agencies standing on the sidelines being critical. Instead, they would be there to offer solutions and help. And so that kind of a process is really different, but that's a process that I know EPA and the state is working towards to facilitate instead of doing the command and control. And this is a really good challenge for them to exercise that that new position. And I'm hoping that will be their goal, to work with you to develop that. It's essential that we don't go through that process and at the end someone sticks a lawsuit in it and stops it, and that's what's happened every time. And so as we move towards this, it's going to be important to assure that that's there. I also know that a vote is going to be required to have a revenue source for any wastewater project. You don't have that, and you need that. And just as Elaine Watson just said, there are people in the community on both sides of this issue that all agree that they will support a 218 vote or an assessment of some sort to get this off the ground and going. They want to assure that this can happen, and many of them need the assurance that the county will be there and help us through.
I commend that, you know, Representative for Senator Blakesley's here, or Assemblyman Blakesley. I just promoted him. Because I think there is an interest, and I commend that he has an interest in this community. He wants to keep it together. He wants to keep local control. We definitely need to have the county on board because we need that their money. The bottom line is we need their assistance to do this, but I think that we've got the right board to do it. I think we've got the right people heading towards the right project for this community. And I think the more you educate them about the project and about the change and the intent to get rid of the divisiveness in this community and actually bring it together, and if this is one of the ways to do it, that you guys are serious about doing a project, you're serious about resolving it, you're not anti-sewer, as soon as we can dispel that myth, and that you, and if they can grow in confidence with the board and staff, the more progress we'll make. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Who else? Mr. Payne?
Bill Cooper. I want to support what Keith just said. I want to support the resolution. After you get past all the smiley faces and kumbaya crap, what's happening is the county does not want the project, and what we have to do is show that we're responsible, capable folk, and if we can show we're responsible, capable folk, then they'll want to work. They will be willing to work with us, so for the good of everybody. I think my opinion is, yes, you guys are doing exactly that. You are showing great responsibility, great abilities. You're organizing Dana Ripley and all the different projects that you have in a very professional fashion. And so I completely support the idea, never to be naive about the county, but the concept of working with the county, having the county help be the bigger picture and work with us, at least temporarily, to get things going is a good one. And again, showing that that we're trustworthy and responsible will go that way, and we've been doing that, I think. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cooper. Mr. Payne.
Good evening again, board, staff, people here and at home. I'm Bruce Payne, resident of Los Osos. I just heard Gail mentioned that there were people in this community that were ready to vote a 218 vote or what it would take to get money, and I think it's about time that you guys joined us asking this for a 218 vote instead of being a partner with the state against us on our right to have a 218 vote. That was what a lot of this was about that got you in office. Three of you in office. As far as working with the county, I would like the county to work with us. They certainly worked with the past board. They gave them a permit on a 30% design of a nightmare, so they should be able to give us a thing. Is always been a good option, and it's economical. And I don't know if the county's going to work with you on that or not, but that's what we got to try for. And so, good luck. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barrow.
Al Barrow. Thank you. Resolution number 2006 doesn't say which one it is, but I assume you have a number for it. Do you have it yet?
For this one?
Yes.
It's 11.
Thank you. The other thing I wanted to say was after the whereases, or actually during the whereases, I think a voluntary on-site program that would allow individual property owners that feel responsible enough to improve their on-site situation, that should be allowed in the on-site management, the voluntary guidelines, by the district. That should be encouraged. That also goes to reducing the pollution right away and shows a serious intent. And those people who want to do it can. And if they have to be collected, there's just that much less pollution in their effluent when it's collected. I don't want to deprive the farmers of a lot of nitrogen, but it should be helpful. The other thing is liability. And let me say, preface all this with Mrs. Biggs is an expert in government law. That's her specialty. And I assume that she put this together. No? Well, she looked at it anyway. I don't know what the liability concern is for the county, but I've seen the triangle approach that would be a CSD, county, and regional board involved in this. Is that a factor in this? And I also don't want to see sludge, and I know that doesn't have a lot to do with this one, but I think that we need some legal protection for liability. We need to spell out, and I assume this is a very flexible document, that it hasn't been, that it leaves a lot of room for the parties. And I suggest that you plan a scoping meeting in the very immediate future with the Board of Supervisors, the Engineering Department, David Edge, the manager, the people from the Planning Department, and invite officials from the Water Board and put them on notice that we've sent out technical information, we're making progress, and that in that scoping meeting, you can discuss the liability issues. County Council should probably be there, and your council should be there too. And you can make this a meaningful document if you have a scoping meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barrow. Okay, I'm reading it as they're talking now. I'm sorry. Ms. Ricard?
Good evening, Board. I just wanted to say this is a historic and positive resolution. This is the kind of cooperation and collaboration that will result in everyone together delivering results that will renew our watershed and our community. I might mention there's a sign of support sheet that will be circulated at the Farmers Market and June Fest for citizens who want to, on all sides.
In its entirety, but I do have some reservations about some of the elements of the wording. So, unfortunately, I do have noted some things that stylistically that I would hope to see changed. And so, before I get into that, may I ask if you are considering adopting it tonight? You are considering adopting it tonight. For example, on this paragraph that's up right now, I would hope that you would strike the words on a temporary basis because there's a certain level of redundancy in that statement. If you read it, you might find that it's necessary to have the words temporary basis in there, and it's sort of weighs down the paragraph. And I would like to go on with a few other paragraphs, if I may. There's a paragraph a couple previously. Let's see. Whereas the Los Osos Community District Board of Directors seeks an outcome that can be considered a victory by all parties. And are we... Is someone moving that, by the way?
Mr. Perlman, could you repeat your comment about that paragraph?
It's a paragraph on the top of the second page, and that paragraph is, whereas the Los Osos community seeks an outcome that can be considered a victory by all parties. Since there are parties who would only consider themselves victorious if the CSD is dissolved. Are we on the same page?
I don't see it. I'm sorry, I don't see it. I don't see anything about
this. This is a copy that was... This was over...
It's been changed, sorry.
It has been changed. Yes, well, I'm glad that that change was made.
I don't, yeah, that's why we're having trouble. I couldn't see it.
That would be the case.
That was a draft.
Okay.
And you missed... We read most of it, and most of it's been on the screen. So
again, my apologies for not being here. Let's see,
okay.
The fourth paragraph. Disappeared.
Fourth paragraph? Keep going.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Well, on this copy, I had an objection to the fourth paragraph, which should have been on the top bottom page, which says that the community would be collectively harmed for the foreseeable future.
We added in the immediate and foreseeable future.
And that's it?
By a failure to rise above the divisive conflicts and seek compromises.
Yeah, I would say just failure to resolve the conflicts and seek to compromise. These are very subtle changes, but I do believe that they would reflect better on the document.
Okay, thank you for your comment.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Margeson?
Richard Margeson. Heard a number of times from our supervisor that, you know, we forgave a $5 million, she considers it a loan, but she left us with a water department that at this point is spending $5 million on infrastructure upgrades. The condition of our roads, the lack of parks, the county needs to do something for this community. They have the ability, they have the resources, or at least they have the contacts to put those resources in our hands. I'm curious who wrote this, if it was staff or collaboration of the board. It's just a question. You know, this is going to the board of directors, but keep in mind this is an election year, and we need this cooperation while we have this short window before people go to the polls in November for this help to come from... You know, whatever Mr. Blakeslee can do, whatever our state senator can do, whatever our state representative Lois Capps can do, and whatever our national senators can do for us. You can make Los Osos a point in their campaigns as we get towards Election Day. And then the last thing I want to deal with is paragraph one. You know, I like the concept of this letter, but I think it needs to be as accurate as possible when it goes forward. And I'll go down about let's see, be about 5-6 lines. It says, developed an aggressive water conservation plan program with shower retrofits and plans for a toilet retrofit program. I think that's a little deceptive. You know, I've never seen the plans for our shower retrofit program, what the requirements are, who gets them. The toilet retrofit program is tied to us coming up with funding. Maybe just rewording that in the process of developing or has developed something. But the one that is definitely flawed is the next one, revise the water rates in alignment with conservation goals. We haven't done that yet. We haven't even ordered a new rate study yet. That discussion, the preliminary discussion of that, is coming on Wednesday at the Water Ops meeting. And then continued replacement schedule of leaking service connections. Maybe continues to replace substandard service connections, because they're not just replacing leaking service connections, they're replacing leaking and the substandard. We're upgrading the system. That's a positive. I mean, it's a positive that you can show them. I just think it's inaccurate. Other than that, this is great. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Margetson. Ms. Owen?
Wendy Owen, in the last sentence, a requirement in 83.13 that was not addressed, that was about the septic management. I believe that's 83.12 where that was addressed, so you might correct that. That's all. I think it looks like we're moving in a real positive way to work.
Text. Are we going to edit it now? Or?
I really want to adopt this tonight. I think it's the time is of the essence.
Okay,
Timmy,
I would support Alon Perlman's recommendation to strike on a temporary basis. It's really kind of meaningless, I think, because we're asking for this assistance for this project. And on a temporary basis, does that mean a week or a month or till it's complete? Till it's complete is a permanent basis for the project as far as the project's concerned. So I would support that, taking out on a temporary basis.
I'm not so sure about that, because I think from the county's perspective, they kind of want it understood that, that this is kind of a temporary.
Why don't we say a limited basis?
Because that sounds like we're not wanting their full cooperation.
Well, that has to be worked out. I don't, you know, if it's.
Director Sennett, I would just ask your indulgence on that, and Mr. Perlman as well. Some of us who have met with the county help. That goes to Mr. Margetson's question. This resolution was developed by those of us who met with the county and talked to them about their concerns. So I would ask that you trust that the wording is there for a reason. And if it's semantic and you can live with it, it's not the end of the world. I would appreciate it if we kept it. I would like to make the corrections that Mr. Margetson made. And it's no offense to you, Mr. Perlman, because that you weren't at the meeting, so how would you know? So if you would be indulgent with that, and Director Sennett as well, if that'd be okay, that would be helpful at this time. Would anyone else have any other comments or corrections? I'd just like to, okay, Director Tassania?
Well, I was just wondering what we did about the revised water rates statement. It's kind of difficult to mix tenses in a paragraph. You know, we developed this, we're developing that, we did this, we're working on that. So for ease of continuity, I guess it all reads properly now, even though we're probably fudging our toes over the line.
Okay. Mr. Blesky, did you have an addition? Or Mrs. Biggs, our English major?
I was going to say on that one, you could say took action to begin revising. Your tenses are then consistent and you're honest besides.
To be perfectly honest, we have not done that. We have not done that.
Well, actually, the marching orders for the utility from me is that we need to look at, as part of any rate study, a restructuring of our base charge versus a commodity charge. It's not started, that's correct, but the scope has been placed. It would be more in the process of. I mean, this is something that seriously has to be looked at because it is critical to conserving water.
It is.
I think there's
just haven't done it.
We haven't started it. That's absolutely correct. And I think that's where the concern is over the accuracy of the state.
Get ready to... why not just in the process of developing a revised rate structure?
I'm okay with that. Who isn't? Speak now or forever hold your peace. Okay. All right. Do we have all our changes?
There was one other that I think kind of furthers on the line that starts conservation goals, continued replacement schedule of leaking service connections. The recommendation was to change that of substandard and leaking service connection. I noted that from the speaker.
That's right. I'm okay with that. How's the board? Everybody okay? Okay, and then changing 8313 to 8312. Got that one? If you add 1983 to 2006, it's not really 30 years. So, is that one of yours, Alon? So fix the number of years to reflect 83 minus 2006. 23 years. There we go. Any other changes? Director Sennett?
Real minor, but do we put it in block format, or does it matter for resolutions?
I'll check the format because we've been pretty consistent in almost all of our resolutions.
Okay.
Okay, could I have a motion, please? I move that we adopt the resolution with the changes as noted.
I'll second that.
Any other discussion this time? Could I have a roll call vote, please?
Director Sennett?
Yes.
Director Sestania?
Yes.
Director Tacker?
Yes.
Vice President Fiché?
Yes.
President Schicker.
Yes. Thank you, everybody, for your wonderful comments, edits, and patience at this hour. We're going to end with our closing comments and say goodnight after that. So who wants to go first tonight? Director Tacker, do you want to go first?
I wanted to thank everyone for coming, thank the Ripley team for their great presentation. Very exciting. Mr. Blesky and I have not had a chance to talk, so I'm going to do this now. June Fest or Family Fest is Sunday, and our board has not, I hope they've conveyed to you that they're willing, the board members were going to maybe take a couple hours down there at our booth, if they could coordinate with you so that somebody's there all day. I know that the outreach committee is working on getting materials down there. The utility department has quite a lot of water conservation information, septic tank management information. I think we're going to have a little some information on the piranha. I'd like to see, Mr. Blesky, this part. I'd like to see the utility Woodside Nursing Center. So have a great time. I hope the weather's good for you. I hope the community sees you down there and asks you lots of questions that we can all bring back to our decision-making in the future. Thank you and good night.
Thank you, Director Tacker. Director Sennett, do you want to go next?
I'll put my mic on. I'd like to thank everybody for coming tonight and hanging in there. It's a little late. I'd like to recognize the great hard work that everybody's staff and especially our president has put in. There's so much work that goes on behind the scenes to make this come to fruition. And as we conduct the district's business in order to get this project built, new information comes to light that really changes everything. And I think tonight we saw a lot of information that really tells a lot about the community's movement to getting a final project done. And with this information, I think that things are turning, and we're finding that the people trying to frustrate the district at this point, trying to impede the progress, I think should now show that the anti-sewer people are not any bit associated with the community. They're now the people trying to frustrate the district and see it dissolved. To me, those are the anti-sewer people. And I'd like to thank everybody tonight.
Thank you, Director Sennett. Director Sassanian?
I would like to echo what Steve said in thanks to our president. And there's just a tremendous amount of work that goes on. Also, I would like to thank Sam Blakesley for all the help that went into this resolution. And I would like to ask that the county and water boards and everyone else that we're asking for cooperation realize that all we want is a sound, sustainable solution that isn't going to bankrupt our community. We want it based on real numbers, real science. We're not trying to shirk our responsibilities to the environment. But we would like a community left in place here after we try and put this project together. And thank you all for being here and hanging in so late.
Vice President Boucher.
For me, I echo everything that has been said, and I do appreciate Sam Blakesley and his office for all their expertise and help. It's been incredible what he's done for this community, and I really appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Ripley, for what you presented tonight. That was great. I think the community needed to see that, and it's out there. The tech memos are available. The displays are available at the office.
Buy a new one. But it's still a water conservation front loader.
I obviously, from those of you who have been watching the meeting tonight, know that I am so tired I can hardly speak. So I just want to close and say thank you to everybody. Thank you to Assemblyman Blakesley. Thank you to our committees. Thank you to our staff. And thank you to my wonderful colleagues on the board. And thank you to our community. And those of you who are watching, I say this many times, but I mean it. It's collaborative and cooperative, and that means all of us. And I sincerely mean that. And I hope you attend future meetings and committee meetings. We want to see all of you here. Thanks and good night.
Dan, I have something for you.